special holiday rebroadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From January 29th and December 20th of this year, it's Art and his guest Mel Waters talking about Mel's school. And now, the best of Coast to Coast AM.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Mel Waters has appeared on Coast to Coast AM several times over the years now. Many may remember his accounts of the mysterious hole on his property in Central Washington, which appeared to have no bottom. The hole was, by Mel's account, measured to a depth of 80,000 feet, utilizing fishing line and a weight. Since Mel's first appearance on the show, many strange, fascinating, and rather unfortunate things have happened to Mel and the people somehow related to the hole. In a moment, it's back to Mel's hole and more. And Mel. Here he is from, I don't know where he is right now, Mel Waters. Mel, welcome to the program.
I'm here in the Pacific Northwest.
Somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. That'll do. First of all, it's great to hear from you, and I guess we heard from you, Mel, because what, were you out somewhere when we did a rebroadcast of the original Mel's Hole thing?
Yeah, I guess this was last week sometime, and I was coming back from Nevada, and it turned out I get a lot of rides from truckers.
Uh-huh.
You might find this interesting. I look a hell of a lot like Willie Nelson.
Do you?
I mean, you know, people will come up to me, and particularly truckers, and say, do you know you look like Willie Nelson?
No kidding.
And then I tell them, no, I'm not Willie Nelson. I am Mel Waters.
And they know who you are?
Well, they know exactly who I am. And next thing you know, I've got three or four truckers standing around me, and we're talking. And
well, how do you get them to believe you? I once was out in, I've got an RV, Mel.
Yeah.
And we talked to truckers on CB. You know, that's real handy when you're on the road. And I encountered some truckers, my wife and I did, and we were running with them. You know, you do that. You kind of run in a pack. And they wouldn't believe it was me. They said, your name is Art. You're from Broadway. Are you Art Bell? I said, yes, I'm Art Bell. They said, no, you're not.
I haven't had any problem with it. It's interesting. I guess a lot of the truckers that are listening to you aren't seeing you on your website. I guess they have no mental picture of you at all. So I think.
Well, I mean, even on the radio, though, on CB. We were just talking to them on CB.
Oh, so they heard your voice.
Yeah, that's right. They would not believe it was me.
Oh.
They finally did, but it took about an hour. Anyway, Mel.
So we're heading back, and we're near Portland, and he turns on the radio, and I'm on the air. You know, at first. I didn't believe I was, this is a dream. We've been on the road too long. And that was, and we were wrapping up the show there, and I decided, well, I'm heading back here. I had to see a doctor for a checkup here. And so I came up here, and I decided, what the heck, I'll bring the audience up to date here. I kind of left people dangling there at the end of.
Yeah, I got a lot of, hey, I'm dangling here. What's the story on Mel's Hole? To bring everybody, just very quickly, the 101, you had a piece of property in Washington.
Yeah, out near Ellensburg, Washington, the center of Washington State, near the Menasash Ridge, which is sort of like the mountain range that runs along, Ellensburg is in the Kittitas Valley, and so you got a valley, you've got mountain ranges and ridges and so forth, and that's basically where the property is located, out there.
What happened. Go ahead, tell them
What happened with the property.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Okay, we'll give you the nickel tour, as
thank
it were.
You. Thank you, good.
Okay. Basically, this was back in 97, so this was 5 years ago almost, that I sent a fax to the show here, and basically I described what I had done about this hole and how I lowered some fishing line into it because, quite frankly, for years and years and years and years and years, people were dumping stuff into the holes. I'm talking refrigerators. I'm talking dead animals. My favorite thing to toss in there was TV picture tubes, but no matter what we tossed in there, we never heard anything hit bottom.
Let me stop you for just one second. Mel, do you have a Bible?
Yes.
Go get your Bible. I'll wait.
I have the Bible right here, and I will...
You have it that handy?
Yes.
Place your hand on it, Mel.
It is right on the Bible.
Do you swear to me, with your hand on that Bible, Mel, that what you are telling me and about to tell me is the whole truth, the absolute truth?
Let us say the absolute truth.
Absolute truth. Cute. I'm sorry about the whole truth thing. The absolute truth, with your hand on the Bible, so help you God.
Yes, I do.
All right. All right, then let us proceed.
So you
threw TV picture tubes down, but I mean, I remember cows going down and...
Yeah, some people do dead cattle out there. I had a little Mexican fellow that used to throw literally truckloads of tires down there.
And there was enough, the hole was big enough so that you could throw something down and you wouldn't hear it cascading off the side as it went down.
It was 9 feet across, and it had a retaining wall around the top of it, and the stone went down a bit. But as far as I can tell, as far as I could see...
No splash, no crash, no bang, nothing.
And it seemed to be, and it didn't look like it tapered. It looked, you know, from everything that I could see.
It looked as wide as far as you could see.
It was a hole.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's further than I could see it tapered. I had no idea. But I figure if something tapered, eventually tapers down to nothing, and things start collecting.
Well, 9 feet in diameter, that's a big hole.
That's a good side hole. That's three yards across. That's more than the average human being is standing up.
So you had something across the hole, right?
Yeah, we put some corrugated metal and stuff on top of it kind of to secure it.
By the way, had you fenced the hole in? Was there any protection? Was there a sign up that said...
Beware of the hole? No.
Yeah, beware of the hole.
I think, would fall under the category of attractive nuisance.
Uh-huh.
You start warning people, and that gets people enticed. So.
But how about protecting people? I mean,
what the corrugated metal on top was for. It was secured on there pretty good, so
okay.
you couldn't open this up without basically busting the mechanism open. And
so you began lowering fishing line into the hole from this centerpiece, right?
Yeah. First, I used to do a lot of shark fishing, so I had a couple of big fishing poles with a lot of line on them. And what I was curious about is to find out if there was any water down there. You know, what the heck? So I lowered a big reel full of line into it, and had a roll of lifesavers on the bottom. The roll of the lifesavers was simply because if they hit water, the lifesavers would dissolve.
Absolutely.
It would melt. You know, it's an old fisherman's trick. So that's what I did. You know, I lowered down, I emptied this reel. I assume there's about 500 yards of line on this particular reel there.
Right.
I did that with another reel, so I connected them up there and I get down to about 3,000 feet. And same result. And then finally, I get kind of nuts about the whole thing there, so I went and bought basically monofilament in wholesale quantities. It's the kind of stuff that they fill the fishermen's reels with down at the sporting goods stores. You see, they have monster reels.
Giant.
So, you know, basically I started lowering the stuff down there on a 1 pound lead weight into the hole.
By the way, did you have any help, or were you doing this all by yourself?
Well, about... No, the project was conducted by myself. I didn't have, you know, assistance or anything.
Yeah,
like
it was
that.
Your own property anyway, right?
It was my property. My wife was becoming estranged from me, so she wasn't hanging around or anything. I was just sort of out there at the property doing, you know, just to satisfy my own curiosity. And basically, at the point where I had reached 80,000 feet of line into the hole, and I had a little. For lack of a better word, I had a little widget that kept track of, it's just like a little, it's like a mechanical digital counter. But it was made for measuring how much line goes down. So I knew exactly how much line I'd put into the hole at that point.
Which was?
80,000 feet.
80,000 feet.
8,000 times 10, or 80,000, 80,000 feet. Something like 15 miles of line went into that hole.
There are people who have questioned, you had a little weight, of course, on the end.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you had the weight of the line itself. Now, at some point, people say the line would be so heavy that you would have no idea whether you actually hit bottom or not?
Well, yeah, I would think so. You know, and again, the only thing is, I do recall I got back to you, and what I did is I actually measured the weight of the line in the hole.
Okay,
I had a little spring fisherman's
scale
on the thing, and I believe I had somewhere between, with the weight on the bottom, between 17 and 18 pounds of weight attached to the top.
All right.
That's
well, that
would have
been
there.
Within the limits. All right.
I don't know. I think about it now, and I think about what I've been through, and I think about all these things here, and I don't know what to make of any of this stuff. I don't know why. I mean, I know that. Well, didn't you have somebody talk about they're drilling like these huge deep holes in Russia or something like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay, you got your deep holes there. I don't know what the depth of a hole is. The hole there has been there for as long as anybody can remember. If you talk to some people there, they say, oh, yeah, this was there, you know, from my grandfather.
There are people who say they are volcanic vents or whatever.
Could be.
It could be. But still, at 80,000 feet, no bottom of the hole. Now, this hole exhibited some, lack of a better term, paranormal aspects.
Well, yeah, and I believe what I had noted was that, you know, my dogs wouldn't have anything to do with it. You know, they wouldn't go anywhere near it.
Right.
Birds didn't mess with the retaining wall. You know, it's the kind of place birds like to go. They didn't go anywhere near it. That there were people that told me various things that, you know, when I talked to them about it, one man claimed he had thrown a dog that died into it, and at some point after that, he was out there hunting around up there in the hills, and he saw the same dog just going through the woods like it was hunting with somebody.
So the hole then brought the dog back to life.
Well,
is the idea.
Now here's the thing here. I said, well, did you call the dog back to you?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, did it come back to you? He said it looked like it was hunting with somebody else. That's what he said.
Well, at least it was happy.
It was there on the same places where he had gone to.
Now, you believe so strongly in the powers of this hole, I know, that as one condition. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself.
The
government came and took your hole.
There was quite a period of time there where, after the program, all hell had broken loose. And, yeah, I was going back to the hole. I actually wasn't living, when I had talked to you originally, I was not living on the property. We had just had a really major snowstorm, like 2 feet of snow in 24 hours, and most of my trailer buildings and stuff were all caved in on the property, so it was a real mess out there. Anyway, I'd taken an apartment in town, and so, you know, it was the next day or whatever. I go back there, and, you know, I'm driving up to my property, and even before I get anywhere near the property, I'm met by basically uniformed people who are telling me that there was a plane crash on my property, that they have to investigate and clear the accident, and that I'm, you know, not to, you know, they will let me know when I can come back.
Now, this, bear in mind, everybody, this was immediately after our broadcast.
This is almost
nobody knew about the hole until the broadcast. Immediately after the broadcast, the next day he goes back and they're giving him this plane crash.
I'm no dummy. I'm looking around. I don't see any smoke. I don't smell any smoke. And I didn't see any evidence of what would be a plane crash. So I'm pretty much believing they're handing me a bill of goods.
Right.
And, you know, I said, look, this is my property. I want to get onto it.
Mm.
And basically there were some threats made against me that, you know, I was being told that it would be fairly easy for people to find a drug lab on my property there. I'm basically a man who deals in herbs and Native American herbal medicine.
No, they're saying, like, back off, buddy, or we got you,
and what could I do?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what I had there, I suppose, could be construed as a drug lab. I mean, I don't know, but that's where I was.
Well, was it a real drug lab, or?
Well, I had the various plants that grow native in that area there. I had some plants that I brought up from Nevada growing over there, but none of these things are anything but plants that you would find
growing in a high desert environment.
And there are a lot of psychedelic hallucinogenic plants.
I did not deal with anything like that.
Well, but that's normal. I mean, that's all over the desert. It may not be widely known, but it's truth. There's all kinds of hallucinogens that grow naturally in the desert.
Oh, the people that know, and I've worked extensively with Native Americans, and you know, they can walk through an area, and they can tell you everything.
Okay, so it's not like you had a meth lab up there or anything.
Yeah, that's what they were implying.
It was herbal stuff. All right. So they scare you the hell away. Then how did you come to make a deal with the government? How did that happen?
I have a hard time figuring out what led around here. Basically, I wasn't going to back off. I was talking to the press. You are the press, Art Bell. And so what they did is offer to lease my property from me in perpetuity for a very healthy sum of money. And I'm talking like $250,000 a month. Yeah, that's $3 million a year.
That's a lot of money.
And, I had agreed for them to let me relocate in Australia, a place that I love and actually wish I could go back to, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, you did, in fact, go to Australia because I had a couple of emails from when you were there.
I would contact you from time to time there just to let you know I was okay.
And you were in Australia. Oh, I know that's true. So you had taken the money, and I figured you were probably sipping martinis in some nice Aussie outback location with lots of nice young Australian, and just having a nice life.
Combing my beard and all that stuff.
So what the hell happened?
Well, and then I was doing well. I did a lot of good work over there. One of the things that I was allowed to do was to bring some of my plants with me.
Did they send you the money?
Oh, yeah. It appeared regularly in my account. I got the money. Johnny on the spot. It was great. They allowed me to bring my dogs with me, which I don't know if you know about transporting dogs across the seas, but you normally can't bring dogs.
I know. Well, without quarantine for a long period of time.
They were not in quarantine. They just said, hey.
So they got you right past that.
They got me right through there. I got the red carpet treatment.
You were the king of the hole, no doubt about it.
That was it. I was living good. I was happy, and basically, doing fine, doing my work out there, did a lot of work out there on wombat rescue and wombat restoration there. It was great.
How many $250,000 payments did they actually come through with?
Well, I was there from, I haven't tallied it up there, but I was basically there from March of 97. Until right before the millennium, I mean the year 2000.
Okay, all right. Mel, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm Art Bell. Mel Waters is my guest. Much more ahead.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there. Telling me.
in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
My guest is Mel Waters of Mel's Pole fame, and he'll be right back. Now, the keepers of the network vault of time information inform me that Mel Waters was originally on the program February 21st of 1997, then again February 24th, 3 days later. Then he wasn't on until April of 2000. That would have been, what I guess, when he came back to the U.S. So that's the timeline we've got. That sounds about right, Mel. So, they paid you, Mel, a lot of money. I mean, there were several payments of $250,000, right?
Oh, yeah. Just nice as every month it was.
Well, what the hell happened to all the money?
Well, I'll tell you what happened, and I had come back in December.
Okay.
Of what was it? When was I was on?
Would have been 2000. You were on
right.
April of 2000. So
2001.
Well, it says 2000 here. Maybe the timekeeper.
Okay, then it was right before the millennium.
Right.
Okay, so in 1990.
No. This was the millennium. I mean. Zero, zero.
In 1999, in December, I'd come back, and I actually contacted you to appear on the air.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was in the USA, and
right.
I thought we'd just kind of...
Exactly.
Actually, it would have been a boring interview. It would have just been, how life was good in Australia and how wonderful things were.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But everybody would know, hey, Mel's alive, he's doing okay. Basically, at that point, I was helping my nephew move from Tacoma to Olympia, and I would during the day before the interview.
Right.
And I we moved him down there in a U-Haul truck, and I was driving the truck back, and I was going to take the bus back to Olympia. There was some strangeness that occurred on the bus. There was an altercation. From what appeared to me, there were policemen and transit people that came over there. I was asked to give my statement. I said, no, I got to get back to Olympia, blah, blah, blah. I can't miss the last bus. They said, that's okay. You can talk to us. We'll drive you back in the van. That was the last thing I remembered, because when I had woke up, it was about 12 days later, and I was in a real seedy part of San Francisco, lying in an alley. These winos were basically trying to get me to sing on the road again.
Beaten up, as I recall.
I was bad. I had no teeth in the back of my mouth, no molars. They were gone.
A dentist, by the way, has since done some exemplary work for you.
Do you like that? He gave me some state-of-the-art dentures. They are wonderful.
So, I mean, you were abducted. You were beaten up. God knows what happened to you. You found yourself in San Francisco in a disaster. You have come back from that, obviously, but I still want to know, Mel, what the hell happened to all the money?
Well, what happened was that when I had gone back and I was with my nephew, I found out that I had been served with legal papers that said that basically the terms of my divorce with my former wife were basically had been canceled. I had lost my rights because of the various modifications that were made to the property after I was no longer using the property. Basically, septic systems were put in. There was various paving that was done and modifications that basically I was not allowed to do.
Right.
And so I no longer had any claim on that property. And that's basically where I'm left. So.
Well, okay. Still, though, Mel, what about all the money you did receive? I mean, did you blow it on wine, women, and song, or what?
When you have a lot of money, you could only eat so much food and drink so much good scotch.
That's right.
And I devoted a good deal of the money I had, one, for the research I was doing. That was my activity. And two, creating a facility for dealing with
our wombat friends in Australia.
Yeah, I know you were very concerned about that.
I remember you writing about wombats. I am so proud of them, because if you go now...
So your money went to the wombats, really?
The majority of it, but right after that, and I tried to access my money. My money wasn't there. I had sent emails to my colleagues in Australia. They said my whole facility was dismantled over there.
Oh, my God.
Everyone was given a severance check, because I had... various students and various people working for me there, because, you know, I'm not a veterinarian or anything like that. So, again, you can go through money, quite a bit of money there.
And
I was glad to do it. So there I am, you know, lying in the gutter, no teeth. My, I could still see the tape on my arms where they had taped down an IV or some sort of thing to it. So I was out of it for the longest time. And, I contacted my nephew, and he managed to get me a bus ticket back north.
Brother, talk about going from being a whole baron to absolutely
I had nothing. I left everything when we last talked.
Now I know that you've had contact with the Native American community since you've been back. Is that right?
Oh yeah. In fact, that we will get into that, because that leads to part two of all of this.
But yeah, I know.
Kind of wrap things up. I wanted to bring up some things, because you probably noticed I was pretty ticked off that they'd stole my belt buckle.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Amongst working with herbs and stuff, I'm kind of an itinerant jeweler as well, and I make things. And, I went back to Ellensburg, and because I'd sold a number of these similar belt buckles at the farmer's market and through little consignment jewelry stores in Ellensburg.
Right.
And so, sure enough, when I'm there, I run into a guy who's wearing one of my belt buckles. Now, and they were made with a silver fork, and I had...
Yeah, you'd know your own work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were very unique, and this was kind of a little folk art thing, and I had...
What is the point, though?
Well, the point is that... I kept on thinking, why would they take my belt buckle? Yeah. That was the thing. I mean, this was a very personal item there that would, you know, I had another belt buckle on my belt. See what I'm saying? Why take a man's belt buckle?
Makes no sense.
Yeah. So anyway, I run into this guy, and I said, hey, you bought one of my belt buckles. He said, oh, yeah, I love this thing. Anyway, so we take a look at it, and we're looking at it, and basically the motif on there is I had... three coins, you know, that had affixed to it in bezels.
Right.
There was a coin with Winston Churchill on it. There was a coin with Joseph Stalin. And there was a coin dyed with Franklin Roosevelt.
Rather distinctive, yes.
Well, this was folk art representing the great conference that they had.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we're looking at the coins there, and we're noticing there it is a 1943 Roosevelt dime.
Yeah.
Franklin Roosevelt was still alive in 1943.
You're sure?
Yes, absolutely sure. Absolutely sure. It was a 1943 dime.
Well, that just makes no sense whatsoever.
I found a, you know, on my property, you know, I'd cleared a land, you know, I found that Nazi sort of gun there. It was a P-38 that I gave to the landlord as a deposit.
I recall, yes.
And we dig up all kinds of things, bits of metal and stuff like that. Well, I found one time I was digging around there and just rooting around, I found one of these red Chinese lucky money envelopes, you know, the kind of Chinese give it to each other on...
Yes.
On New Year's?
Yes, yes, yes.
And it had 10 of these dimes in it. So I got 10 dimes. You know, I'm making, you know, these belt buckles. I put one in each one there. So we're examining this dime here with this fellow in Ellensburg. And it struck us at the same time. I mean, when I told you 1943 Roosevelt dime, you thought, okay, well, you know, it couldn't exist. We had a dime that there's no way it could exist.
Right.
But it looked just like your normal dime, but from 1943. And the only other thing that was kind of peculiar about it was that it had a B as in baby mint mark on it. Now, we have S for San Francisco, P for Philadelphia, D for Denver.
Right.
But I have no record anywhere of a B as in baby.
Or Boston.
Mark. Boston. Could be Boston. I don't know what it was, but I know of no B mint mark on a dime. Anyway, this guy is really curious. He decides to go see a big-time coin dealer about this coin. And he goes in there, and the coin dealer takes a look at it. He just is like, mouth is hanging open. This, I'm telling you, I'm relating a story from my buddy.
Okay.
He looks at this thing, and he's just flabbergasted. He's just,
but what I don't understand is how all this relates.
Well, it ties into why my belt buckle was taken.
Oh.
Because it had the same coin on there.
Oh. No. Are you fairly sure it was not the same belt buckle?
I had made a series of 10 of them. I made one, 10 a coin. I had 10 of those same coins.
I understand. So now was this the same belt
no,
buckle?
No, it was one that he must have bought.
Okay.
Okay.
Would you have any way of knowing if it was the same one?
No. They were very. They were all custom made, so each one is a little bit different.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I would know for a fact that it was not the one I wore every day of my life.
All right.
But you know, he took it to a coin dealer, and the coin dealer was just amazed. He had no. I mean, he couldn't even begin to grasp what he was holding in front of him. You know, he started telling him, I don't know. This could be a prototype.
Well, nothing explains it. I mean, time travel, what would explain...
But something created before Roosevelt would have even died. You know, when they created that dime, they went to, you know, they sped up the process to get a Roosevelt dime after he died. But there's nothing that explains it. The guy offered him a huge amount of money, the coin dealer. Here, I'm going to write you a very substantial check. You give me the dime. The guy says, let me think about it, okay? I'll give you my number. You give me a call, and, you know, and I'll let you know what I think. And make a long story short, a day or two later, this guy is visited by Treasury officials there who said they have to confiscate this coin from him for some legal reason or another, so they took the coin away from this.
Should have made the deal the day before.
He should have made the deal.
Somehow, do you remember where you got these coins?
Yeah, they were on my property.
They were on the property. Showed up laying on the property?
No, I was actually digging around there, you know, because I, you know, turned a lot of dirt over there to plant stuff and grow things there. And
you know, I think about this, and nothing explains it. I mean, time travel would not explain it.
The only thing that I even began to think about, you know, it's like over the years I didn't pay attention to it, but it was like, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but in the middle of every intersection, you know, on the road,
yes,
there's always a little pile of nuts and bolts. If you drive by, you'll notice them.
Yeah.
Little springs right in the middle of the intersection.
Yeah.
Stuff that falls off of cars.
Right.
And it seemed to me like that property was like that. All kinds of odds and ends. Over there. I mean, why would I find an old...
Well, you know, it's strange that you would mention all of this now. I remember you're telling the story of your belt buckle being gone, but you didn't go into the detail about your belt buckle before.
Because I didn't know the significance of it. I just looked at it as a couple of old silver dimes.
So now, suddenly, you relate it back to the hole in the property.
Exactly.
I see.
Exactly. So I got this, you know, so that kind of explains why the buckle would be taken from me.
I suppose so. It might be proof of...
Something other than
who
it
knows
should be.
What, yeah.
But that happened over there. And I just wanted to bring it up today. I haven't been able to track down my former wife at all. I mean, she is just like... vanished. I don't know where she is. I don't know what name she's going under. I have no idea.
All right. Here's a question for you, Mel.
Yeah.
The military obviously still is in possession of your property. Yes.
Well, I'm. You know. We have been saying military. We have been saying government.
whatever, whoever they are, they've got it, right?
There is someone in possession of the property, yes.
So if a person were to go to this property, they would be halted or stopped before they could go on and make any sort of investigation or whatever, right?
I'm going to assume a number of things since I have not actually gone anywhere within 5 miles of the property since then, that there's a chain link fence around it. There's probably a sign that says agricultural research, do not enter, or something like that. That's what I'm going to assume.
Okay.
Okay. I'm also going to assume that what it looked like when I owned it or had it in my possession, it doesn't look like it now. I will also clue everybody into one thing. Art, are you familiar with the Terra server?
Yes. That's
the satellite imagery?
Yes, you can get satellite imagery of almost any spot on Earth.
Okay, you go to the Terra server.
Yes.
And you go see the pictures where my property is in the Monastash.
All right, well, why don't you tell us how to do that? In other words, what specific photograph are we looking at? There should be a number or something.
Well, yeah, I don't have that handy, but if you found Ellensburg.
Yes.
And you zoomed out, so
right.
The picture got smaller.
Right.
You will see where my property is, and it's very easy to see where it is.
And in how would we identify it?
Because it has been expunged.
What do you mean?
Those pictures do not appear on the satellite server. The ones taken in June of 2000.
Well, instead, where your property ought to be, what do we see?
Two white squares.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. You go to Terra server, that's provided by Microsoft. I'm not going to give any URLs.
No, a lot of people know how to do it.
And look up Ellensburg.
Right.
Zoom out.
Right.
So you get and then you will see over where the Monastash Ridge is.
Yes.
My property blanked out. Actually, quite a bit. There's quite a few.
Wow.
So that is... You know, you don't have to go by what I say.
No. Listen,
you can look at it yourself.
Trust me when I tell you. One of my listeners, within the hour, I can guarantee, will find the exact photograph you're talking about,
yep.
If it exists.
Yep.
Send me the URL,
yep.
And or send Keith the URL, and we'll get it up and take a look. And you're claiming...
It's not there.
But
it has been expunged.
Well, expunge away they might, but that still would identify the exact location.
Well... It still covers a lot of ground there, but where it is, and I assume that because this picture was taken in 2000, okay, this I believe it was in June or something of 2000,
right?
That there's been a lot of differences made in that area, and none of these. See, you get a really good picture on a Terra server.
Well, pretty good.
You could basically see a car on the road with the Terra server.
Yeah.
That's from the satellite. So, I mean,
right.
You'd see a hole. You'd see outbuildings. All right.
Let's direct people again. Let's say it again. So, listeners who want to go to Terra Server right now and help us out, tell them where to go again.
Look up Ellensburg, Washington.
Then?
And then you just zoom out on the town until you see the black, the white squares where my property would have been.
And that would be exactly...
On the Monastash Ridge.
All right, there's a good piece of evidence we can go hunting for.
Let's go there, but whoever controls the satellite and releasing it to the Terra server people decided not to let them have these pictures.
Oh, isn't that something?
Okay.
So,
I mean, every listener can do this. I mean, you know, I've had, you know, people want to go out there, and the only thing I tell them is don't go there. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to you. I don't know what people will do to you.
Going to be nothing but grief of one sort or another.
I mean,
it's
these guys to go to Area 51.
You know that people have made treks to find Mel's hole.
I right now I tell you, look, you know, it's there. Don't go there. You don't have to go there. It's there. But don't go there on my account. I don't want to be responsible for anybody. Anyway, so that was... that's kind of like, bringing this into focus here, okay?
It brings us certainly up to date, yes.
And, I had a couple of other interesting things. These things are kind of loose ends, but they're not loose ends.
All right, you're going to have to hold on, because we're at the top of the hour, and then we're going to shortly get to the next hole. Mel has a new, apparently, endless hole. I'm Art Bell. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet. You're going to..."
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Well, folks, for a short time, it would appear as though we brought the entire terrorist server down. However, enough of you went and looked, and we believe we found the frame in question. Keith has it posted right now. It covers an area, it says, 5 kilometers southwest of Ellensburg, Washington. And I'll be damned if there isn't a big white block missing from the center of this part of the terrorist server in the Manhattan, I can never say that, the anyway, the area that he was talking about. We've got the link up there on my site right now. Go to artbell.com, go to program, tonight's guest info, and you will see related link, terrorist server image of Ellensburg, Washington, and there is a big missing area. Now, whether this is it or not, I don't know. We'll ask Mel in a moment, but it's on my website right now. Thank you. Sorry about that, terrorist server. All right, we've got one terrorist server image, which is says it's covering an area about 5 miles southwest of Ellensburg, Washington. Does that sound right?
That's about the neck of the woods we're talking about.
Well, in this neck of the woods, there is one great big white blotted out area where I presume, were I to be able to see it, and it does look like a very interesting area, actually.
Oh, yeah.
There would be Mel's hole somewhere there, huh?
Yeah, that I think that blotch over there covers like a 4 mile by 8 mile area.
My goodness.
But
what a blotch.
Isn't that something?
Yes, isn't it?
My nephew told me about that, and I said, "Well, you son of a gun."
Well, he's right. We've got it up on the website right now. People can go take a look for themselves. So now we have pinned down, better than ever before, the area where Mel's hole actually is. Thank you, Mel. That was that's damn good research.
By the way, not too far from there on the highway that goes to Yakima, I think it's 84 or 85.
Yes.
There's a rest stop. And I had a lot of reports from a lot of people that if they look towards the Manhattan, they will see the black beam of light. They have seen it. I have had truckers, I've had people in town say, "That's where I was. I was looking towards it, and I saw the flash of black light."
Well, now, maybe my audience is not aware, but a television crew went up to Ellensburg after we did the last program
mm-hmm.
and researched this. And I'll be doggone, they didn't find the hole, but they did find near the area where you were talking about a lot of military boot prints and all kinds of information that would indicate the military, in fact, had been there or was there.
Oh, they would have probably seen a lot of yellow gear tread marks in the ground.
Yep.
You name it, it was there. But my nephew coughed that little piece of information up for me, and I thought I'd pass that along to our listeners.
Well, wait till people get a load of this.
And they can ask, why is it that that pretty innocuous, I mean, it, from you know, all intents and purposes, there's not a military base right there.
Well, who knows?
Well, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Not an obvious one.
Very close to my property, there was the Yakima firing range.
This
and I will
incredible.
Tell you that they have expanded the area of the Yakima firing range and also expanded the fly zone over it. Correspondingly.
isn't this all so interesting?
It's all there.
Well, all right, earlier in the program, before you got on, Mel, somebody fast-blasted me, and I consider this a really good question.
Okay.
It is, what are the odds of any single one person finding two apparently bottomless or endless holes in one lifetime? The odds against that have got to be gazillions to one, but then
In fact, so you can't even consider odds, you know.
That's right. So outlandish. By the way, one other thing before we even get to that, Richard Hoagland called at the top of the hour and said, you know what, Art, you're right. Normal time travel could not explain what he just talked about, but there is one thing that could.
And that is?
A parallel universe.
Hmm.
That is to say, a universe in which similar things occurred, but with very different outcomes. And a lot of our best scientific minds now, Mel, are saying that, indeed, that that could very well be the case. You know, there could be a universe in which the Nazis won the war. And so there could be a universe in which the dime that you came to be in possession of on that
property. So the B on it might have stood for Berlin.
There you go. Oh, my God, Berlin. B, I forgot about that. All right, listen, anyway.
So there we are, and a few things I will add to this just to get us current, okay?
Yes.
Is that I had reports from some of my trucker buddies. One said he delivered a huge quantity of fiber optic cable.
Really?
To a warehouse in Ellensburg. Now, okay, I don't know. We're talking a huge quantity of to a warehouse.
Now, let's see, what might they want to do with fiber optics?
Well, he told me that all the guys that were there that were in the office there and at the warehouse where he had to load this stuff in, they were all Israelis.
What?
They were all Israelis.
Now, it's really going to tick me off if the Israelis have our hole.
Well, this is what he told me.
I mean, that is our hole. It's a U.S. hole.
It's on our land here.
That's right.
But he said that the people that took delivery of that
were Israelis.
Now, I talked with another trucker. I love the truckers. The truckers are...
I can tell.
I love them.
They're good guys, I know.
Oh, they're the best in the world.
They are. They actually are.
Delivered, apparently, to the same warehouse, a number of crated instruments, large crated instruments from Lawrence Livermore Laboratory.
Oh, gee.
California ended up in a warehouse facility in Ellensburg. So that's pretty much where I am with Ellensburg. I told you about the coin. I told you about the deliveries.
Yes.
Pretty much up to date.
Now it suddenly brings the whole belt buckle thing down in San Fran into focus. My God, that's incredible now. That's incredible.
I mean, you know, it's funny, Art. You look at some things and you don't put two and two. You say it's a dime. I mean, I told you about it. It's a 1943 Roosevelt dime.
Yeah.
What the heck? That's a dime. What are you, you know, going boohoo about your dime? Until you realize...
Well,
it finally
all drove it home to me. All right,
Again, that was me too. I had these things in my hand. I did little soldering around them and stuff. I mean,
sure.
You know,
So don't feel bad.
All right, now let in view of time here.
Okay, let's move this forward.
Let's. You connected, obviously, because I guess of the plants that you grow, the herbs and all the rest of it, with Native Americans, right?
All I'm going to tell you about them, I don't want to give the name of the tribe because I don't want a bunch of people running down to meet there. These are very poor people. As you know, a lot of the Indians on the reservation are very poor people.
Now, this is in Nevada, right?
In Nevada.
Okay. Here in my state.
There are tribes up there that...
Well, because of the kind of work you did, the metallic work you did in belt buckles and the herbs you grow, I can easily understand the connection you would have with some Native Americans. So you connected with these Native Americans.
Well, they connected with me. They actually contacted me through email.
Oh.
And said, look, would you be interested in coming down and discussing with us, you know, what you're doing, the research that you're doing, and, you know, talk about, you know, I have no, believe me, Art, I have no commercial interest in this at all. But they do.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay?
Fine.
You know, there's not going to be a patented bottle of Mel's magic elixir here, okay?
Okay, fine.
This is their thing. But we swap notes, we talked around a lot, and there are some specific...
they knew who you were because of my program
Okay. So I went down there, and this was in early September of last year.
Oh, okay.
So this was actually before 9/11.
Right.
Okay, but shortly before that.
Early September.
I was pretty much incommunicado, basically, during that whole time, and strangely enough, so a lot of this stuff is news to me.
All right.
We're over there, and, you know, they had done a lot of good work. They had cataloged a lot of plants. You know, we talked plants. I'm sure all this plant stuff is boring. And I asked them if they knew, and I told them, I said the plants that seemed to work the best were the plants that I had been growing on my property, and I described to them which ones they were, and
This was the hole near Washington, right?
And
so obviously you unraveled the story of the hole to them.
Well, they were aware. They were
all right.
All right. And so I says, can you, in your gathering and in your research and your studies, have you found this specific variety? And I said, because this was the variety that grew by the property. And that's where I ended up at the second hole, is because they took me directly to, not for the hole in particular.
Well, then it's obvious to me that they knew your reputation.
Right.
They knew the whole story of the hole, and the real motivation for inviting you down there, aside from the herbs and the rest of it, was that they had a hole of their own.
Well, the hole itself, and we're going to get into the hole, I guess, deeply, for lack of a better term. But
now you're guilty.
I'm sorry, Art. Basically, the hole is not on their property.
Okay.
I mean, you know, basically, their connection, you know, to get from the reservation or where the Indians are to the hole is they know.
But you're telling me this hole is in my state?
In the state of Nevada.
In the state of, oh, my God. Okay.
And if you looked at the picture of where the Monastesh is in Washington, and
right,
try to find similar pictures in Nevada, you'd probably find it there too.
We have very similar looking terrain.
It really is. That's why I love the high desert. That's my kind of land. So I'm up there, and this land is used by members of the Basque, Basque community.
All right.
The Basque are, the Basque are interesting people, and they basically came out to your state and a couple of other states, basically for raising sheep, of all things.
Okay.
And so they are shepherds, and so I am introduced to what is now the second hole.
All right. Tell me about this. I mean, they took you to it.
They took me there. I did not go all the way up to the hole, but there was conversations between the Native Americans and the Basque and blah, blah, blah. And they basically agreed that, you know, everything was as it should be, that I wasn't, you know, from CNN or the FBI or the CIA or whatever.
Right.
And so I went there, and I got to see the hole.
Now, all right. What's there?
What it is that if you, you know, walking up to it, and first of all, this is in a fairly pristine area, okay? So there's, like, no real signs of civilization around there. There's no no roads leading into it. There's no telephone wires, nothing like that. I mean, we're talking pristine area.
Right.
No signs of, except for their habitation, no signs of habitation.
Gotcha.
Okay, you're walking up to it, and what you see sticking out of the ground is a nine, well, the hole itself is the same dimension as the one in Ellensburg.
It's wow.
Wide.
9 feet in diameter?
9 feet in diameter. This one had a metal collar around it.
A metal collar?
Metal, solid metal collar.
That rose from how?
2 feet high and about 2 feet deep. Metal collar, and it had some notches in it that you could look like, in my estimation, you could mate something with it, you know, to lock it in place. It could possibly have been like a locking collar.
You mean something was, it looked, in other words, it looked like something intended to lock to it from above?
Exactly. Something would be lowered onto it and
wow.
locked into place.
Okay.
But the Basque tell me that this property, or this hole here, has been there for all of their experience, and they have been there since the 1800s. Just the way it is, at the same hole. On not their land. They don't own this land, Art. This is probably government, U.S. government land.
Well, the majority of land here in Nevada is BLM.
Well, exactly.
Bureau of Land Management.
It's not, they don't own it, they use the land. You know, they graze sheep, blah, 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 that sort of thing.
And how long have they known of this hole, do you know?
Well, again, the one fellow I know says he knew this from when he was a young man, and he was well into his late 80s, and so he knew it from probably for the last 70 years.
All right, because of what you did, we know a lot, at least quite a bit, about your hole up in near Ellensburg. But
yes.
This hole, what do we know about this hole other than its diameter?
It's the diameter, and apparently it is lined with that same metal as far as you can see.
You're kidding.
It is solidly lined as far as you can see.
So this is not a natural hole by any stretch.
There's nothing natural about this hole at all. Nothing.
Can you tell what kind of metal it is?
No, but I'll tell you one thing, and it was kind of an accident, but I dropped the box wrench on it.
Right.
You know, on the ledge?
Yes.
Made no noise.
No noise.
No noise whatsoever. You know, you drop a box wrench on a metal floor.
Clank.
Clank. Nothing. Yeah, we repeat the experiment. Fine. Nothing, 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 nothing. It makes no... You could pound on that thing with a sledgehammer, and it won't make noise. Okay?
Oh, Mel.
This is what I'm telling you about right now, is that this one here is so different from the one that I had in Ellensburg. Like, totally different. Mostly because of this metal around it.
But well, when you touch the metal, does it feel metallic? Is it cold as metal?
Oh, this wow, this is interesting, because a lot of the fellows that are there, and there was five of us that, you know, towards the end of it, and started with two and we ended up with five. But what they say, when they're up there, even in the wintertime, they can like put their tent and sleeping bag right up against it, keep them nice and warm.
Warm?
Yes. It keeps them nice and warm, but it is not hot. You know, it's not like, you know, like a fire hot. But the metal itself over there
radiates.
I don't even know how to describe it there.
In other words, if you touch it with your hand, is it hot, or does it just produce radiant heat? That
there is heat around it, but it itself is not hot. How does that?
Oh, this is really weird, Mel.
So they are, you know, that's what, you know, that's the thing there. And so we have this you know, hole in there, and they, again, from my understanding, they have known about that hole up there. It's it has been known since the 1800s. It has been known exactly the way it is. I can tell you that some of the people that I talked with towards the end of everything on my way back said it was a spiritual site for them up there. I asked the native...
Spiritual site. All right, hold it right there, Mel. Good cliffhanger point, so to speak. Sorry about that. Mel Waters is my guest, and we're beginning to hear about a second hole, oh my goodness, right here in Nevada.
Of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may recharge at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nod.
Well, all right. Mel has confirmed one thing for us. We found the image on the Terra server that Mel refers to. It has a big white square exactly where Mel's hole would be in Washington. Now, Mel is connected with Native Americans here in my state in Nevada and the Bass, and they've led him to this second well covered with metal. It's got a metal collar all the way around it, and get this, folks, going all the way down inside the well, the metal continues for as far as the eye can see, or as they have been able to thus far detect. More in a moment. Coming up on Thursday, by the way, I've got Jan Lundgren here, who's an advocate of the hollow earth theory. And that may in some way relate to what we're talking about tonight. I have no idea. We'll find out. In the meantime, Mel, so you've got this metal around the hole, about, you said, a foot or two high.
Two feet high.
And 2 feet wide. And the hole is 9 feet in diameter. And as far as you can see, the metal continues down. This is no geographic hole. This is no volcano vent. Or if it is, it's been modified by somebody.
Well, if it's been modified, it's been modified, I'm going to say, long before the technology that we know of today.
To do it. And it looks like there was something that should be latching to this hole from above.
I'm going to call the thing on top a collar, okay? And that's
we'll call it the collar, all right.
And it looked like there's notches in it, and it looked like you could lock something into place or line something up in it.
Gotcha.
It didn't move. I mean, the whole thing was solid. It's solid metal. But there are places where there are notches in it, and something is meant to orient, my opinion.
All right. What did the Basques or the Native Americans tell you about what they knew of the depth of this hole? In other words, I'm sure they've thrown things into it or have experimented with trying to find out how deep it is or something, right?
Well, actually, they didn't do anything with lowering line it or anything to it, but they did relate to me the same phenomenons as that I had described. The fear of animals going by it.
Uh-huh.
Their dogs won't do it. Nothing. They have nothing to do with it there. They too have spoken of the black beam. They've spoken of that.
What kind of? What do you mean, black beam?
From time to time, a black beam. This is a contradiction, but a black beam of light. Okay, comes from the hole. It lasts for a very short time, but it just goes directly up into the sky.
And when you look at it, it looks like a black beam. In other words, as opposed to a lighted sky.
If you had a flashlight and it was capable of throwing off a black, not a black light like we used to have back in the 60s, you know, with all that stuff, but black, solid black.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's what. There's no way to describe it. There's no. I am one of the few people that I've had other people tell me about it. I have never personally witnessed the black beam.
You did perform some experiments on this hole, didn't you?
Okay. Let me talk about the first one. And I'm not a scientist. I'm kind of a researcher. But the first thing that we did is we had a whole bunch of Safeway or 7-Eleven bags of ice.
Uh huh.
You know, the kind that you buy. You know, and we had a couple bags of that. So we had. Put one in a bucket on the surface, and we lowered another bucket of ice into the hole, 1,500 feet.
1,500 feet?
Yeah, we had access to a nice winch and about that much. We only had 1,500 feet of line, and that's what we...
What was the idea of lowering ice into it?
Well, first of all, my curiosity is that I wanted to know, was it hot or cold down there?
Okay.
So we basically waited for the ice to melt about halfway on the surface, and then we would... hoist up the...
I see. So your ice, you had test ice on the surface.
Yeah.
To see how that is melting. Oh, I got you.
Okay. Of, your garden variety convenience store ice,
right.
You know, that you buy anywhere and nothing magic about it or anything like
right.
that.
Right.
And so we lowered it down there. We waited for the ice to melt on the surface there, and it got about half melty, you know. So it was sitting in a bowl of, in a bucket of water with a few bits of ice floating around. We brought it up. And the ice in the bucket did not melt.
It didn't melt.
It was not melted. So we said, this was on...
Now, wait a minute. Now, the hole had been radiating, in some strange way, heat enough that people would camp by it.
Yeah, they did that in the wintertime.
But it doesn't melt ice?
It didn't melt the ice. It came up there. We looked in the bucket. We had ice cubes in there.
Did anything come back up with the ice cubes?
We had ice cubes. You know, I reached in the bucket at ice cube. I picked one up there.
So in other words, nothing else. Dirt, water, anything else?
No, the stuff appeared pretty much the way we had sent it down, with the exception of when I put my hand in the ice wasn't cold. Felt like ice.
What?
Wasn't cold. This is what I'm saying. It wasn't cold. You know, you pick up a piece of ice, you put it in your hand.
It's cold.
It melts, and it's cold. In fact, it makes you cold by melting. That's how cold works.
Right.
Well, it didn't. It wasn't cold, and in the hand, it didn't melt.
So then, now they're more like blocks of glass.
Yeah, I would say so. But we said, okay, what we'll do here is we'll take this bucket and we'll stick it on the fire. You know, a little place to cook. There, stick the
bucket with the unmelted ice?
Unmelted ice.
You put on a fire?
We put it on, like, our cooking fire there.
Okay.
We had a little table and cooking area and stuff over there. And so we put it on there, and the ice catches fire.
What?
The cubes catch fire. And I guess maybe catching fire might be the wrong word. That the ice, we took it off the fire right away. And so we set it on the dirt, and the stuff in the bucket was still burning. And again, burning might not be the right thing. It was giving off heat.
Was there a flame?
It was not so much a flame as a kind of have you ever used a gas stove?
Sure.
Okay. It was like the barest turning a gas stove on. It was like it was glowing like that last flicker before you turn it off completely. That's what it was like around all the cubes. And you could knock the cubes around and separate them, and each one of them, you know, would exhibit the same properties.
Holy smokes.
I will tell you that this bucket, well, some of the bucket there, is still sitting there, as far as I know today, still doing what it was doing the day we put it into the ground and brought it up.
So
this was September, and this is January now. That's how long it's been doing what I call burning. What one guy took some of the stuff home. He put it in his wood stove, and you know he's got a cabin out there, and you know it gets damn cold where he is, and the thing has been keeping his place warm.
Yeah, northern Nevada is very cold.
Oh, it
west. So this is like giving off eternal heat?
It
was neutral when it came out of the well. It was neutral.
We put it on the fire, and it appeared, again, my terminology, this is very bad because
it acted like a fuel.
It will look like if I understand combustion, it was like it was doing combustion in a different way than we would attribute combustion to, mixing air with fuel and creating heat and flame. It was doing kind of the same thing, is what I'd like to say. And it's been burning like that since, again, burning is the wrong word, but that's all I got for it. I don't know how to describe this process since early September. A guy took about a coffee can's worth of this stuff and took it home and put it in his wood stove in his cabin. You know, no wood in there.
Yes.
And the thing has been going since then. Now, we have tried this experiment of just the lowering of the bucket because we figure we'd like to have a lot of this stuff here.
Oh, of course.
You know, so, and sometimes we would go down there and we would get nothing. Sometimes we would get melted. Sometimes, you know, not melted, but real ice. But every so often, this process duplicates itself. So we come up with the same thing. But it isn't like, you know, every time you lower a bucket full of stuff there that
it's going to happen every time.
It doesn't happen every single time.
A quarter of the time? An eighth of the time?
Oh, I'd say one out of three times.
One out of three.
One out of three. And I don't know if it was the amount of time down there.
Do you possess any of this yourself?
I took nothing with me, Art. This is theirs for now. Let's say for now, okay?
What about noise? At any point, did it make any noise?
No, we never, during this process that we went through, it made no noise at all. It made no noise, and we did not notice anything from the surface, anything particularly unusual, okay, at all. I mean, there was just...
Were there any markings on this metal that were discernible? In other words, anything marked or scratched in English or any other language?
Well, we went at it with a hacksaw blade. You couldn't hacksaw it.
You couldn't even dent it?
No. The metal itself, from what I can determine, and I mean, normally if you have a metal thing that's hollow, you could tap on it, and you would hear that it's hollow.
Right.
But with this thing here, you know, if you're beating on it with a, you know, like a tire iron,
no,
it doesn't
noise.
Make any noise. That doesn't give you a gauge as to whether it's hollow or not.
So it was absorbing probably all noise. I mean, there would have
maybe just sucking it up. Maybe it radiated into the ground. I have no idea. That's not my area of expertise. All I know is what I could see with my own eyes, and hopefully. By the end of tonight, maybe somebody will have some
answer.
Yes.
What did the locals believe about this hole?
Well.
I mean, you literally just got back from Nevada, what, tonight or yesterday?
Oh, no, this last week.
Last week.
I got home the night that you did the show as the repeat.
That's right. You told me. Okay.
And so it was one of those, you know, it was probably Richard Hoagland say, one of those synchronous moments there where, ooh, you know, I mean, I'm talking to this guy and he's talking to Mel Waters, you know, and the truck, and then I hear myself, and it's like, hey, I mean, so it was just too much, and so I had to get in touch with you.
Okay, well, again, what did these locals? What was the lore that they told you about the hole?
One of the older Basque men that I talked to, and this was practically as I was heading out of town, told me that was a very to him, he felt it was a very spiritual place, but he knew that the thing from his youth, that it was there exactly the way it is, and he was in his late 80s, so I'm assuming he's known it for 70 years. So he's known it at least from the 30s, and from what he tells me, it's been there as long as the Basque had been in that part of the country, and that goes well into the 1800s. It has existed like that. To be honest, the Native Americans that I talked to were aware of it, but they did not want to deal with it. They did not want to interact with it. Is that a good word? All they would do is pick some of the various plants that I needed that were in the general vicinity of it, because I wanted very specific ones that I had recommended, and they knew of them.
All right. Are they now growing some of these plants in the vicinity of this hole?
Well, some of those plants are there. They appear to be indigenous to the area, so they did harvest some, you know, early on in the season there.
So then again, you saw similar vegetation around this hole to the one in Washington.
Well, that's why I asked them for,
gotcha.
You know, if they knew, you know, I described to them what it was, you know, and the shape of the things and, you know, the size of the variant. And they said, oh, yeah, we know that there. But in terms of why the entree, I assume that the Native Americans knew about this all along there. And I assume that they must have had some conversation with the mask bearer that, you know, would this be okay? Are you interested in this guy? Blah, whatever. And apparently there was no objection, so I have access to this property.
Well,
but I want to respect my access, okay?
What about an experiment, Mel, similar to the one you did in Washington, lowering some sort of line, or better yet, some sort of camera on the end of a line, or
we didn't do that between the Basque and the Native Americans and me. We you know, we don't have, you know, too many nickels to rub together, but I will tell you what we did do. One of the Basque kind of a wise acres, he wanted to lower some marijuana into the hole and see if it would improve its smokability.
So then it would be a pothole, right?
Well, I guess it could be. That I hadn't thought of it that way, but he wanted to do that, and one guy wanted to be lowered into the hole himself.
Well, now you see, in the hour preceding your
appearance, I heard that.
Oh, did you? Two people would actually like to be lowered into such a hole. Now I know that you believed in the powers of the hole in Washington to the degree that in the original agreement, now voided, I suppose, you were to be, upon your death, buried by being dropped into the hole, right?
How I wanted my remains to be dealt with, yes.
Now, that apparently is not going to happen because of subsequent events.
Oh, I've got another place to go now.
Would you really want...
Nevada.
Yes, would you really want to be... I suppose,
when I'm gone,
with some ceremony, dropped into the hole.
Hey, you know, just give me a decent... I don't know what it is when you put someone in a hole. Is that interned, or...
I don't know what you'd call that.
I don't know either. But one of these guys wanted to go into... You know, literally, he wanted to be lowered into the hole. He wanted to, you know, be put in a gondola or something and lowered, you know, from the winch into the hole, and go down as far as we had line, which again was 1,500 feet.
I can assure you, Mel, we could get sponsors for you who would get you all the line you need.
Hey, look, we talked them out of going into the hole because we said, look, see what it did to the ice?
That's a good point.
It says, we sent a bucket of ice down into this hole, and it's sitting up there on the surface burning. I mean, what are you made out of mostly?
Water.
Water. What's going to happen to a human being down there? What properties are going on over there? They had, but I mean the Basque are, as a race, are fearless. When the Moors invaded Spain, they refused to go into Basque country.
What did this man say his motivation was for wanting to go into the hole? I mean, obviously...
He was just a young, headstrong, in his probably late 20s, early 30s fellow that wanted to go into it. He said, this is going to be a great adventure. I want to go in here. I want to see what's going on. But he wasn't thinking with his brain.
Well, there are obviously a lot of people like that, Mel, because I had two of them in the first hour of the program, and they said they would love to be lowered into such a hole.
Well,
and this one, if anything, this one sounds more attractive.
Well, we determined to do, and I'm ashamed to admit it, is that we decided to lower a sheep.
Really?
To the hole.
Really?
A living sheep.
You did?
Into the hole. We had a crate, you know, the sheep could fit into that we could attach the cables to. We're going to take the sheep, stick them in the crate, and then lower them down, you know, to the 1,500-foot level. That's all we had.
Like the ice.
Yeah, that's all we had. You know, I mean, you know, we had enough line basically to go that far, and was stout enough to handle. You know, I'm not sheep guy, but I could pick up a sheep, so it must weigh about 120, 150 pounds. Yeah. Well, so I guess about the size of a small human, wouldn't you say?
What, 150 pounds? You
yeah,
said?
For sheep.
Yeah, I would say that's about size.
Yeah, I'm no sheep expert, but, you know, if I had to say how much does that sheep look like away, about 150, 125 pounds. Anyway,
are you telling me you did this?
I'm telling you that we, first.
All right, I'll tell you what. Don't say a word. Good place to hang everybody up. Be sure they're here next hour. Did he really lower a sheep 1,500 feet into the endless hole?
Look at me, I can see the real.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Mondays can be pretty strange. Tuesdays, obviously, as well. And Wednesday mornings, early, definitely. My guest is Mel Waters of Mel's Hole fame. And now we've got a new hole. And this one's really something. And something about a sheep coming up in a moment. All right, just about to get back to Mel Waters, and he had brought up the subject of a sheep, which apparently they were considering lowering 1,500 feet into the hole. Now, we were having fun last week with Mel's Hole, talking about it a little bit. We knew he was going to be on. And somebody said, well, why not toss a cat down Mel's Hole and see what happens? Now, of course, you know, I'm a cat lover, and so this is not cruelty, because nobody is seriously suggesting tossing a cat down Mel's Hole, but some very creative person with a sound blaster and some talent and a little manipulation created what it would sound like if a cat were to be tossed into Mel's Hole. It's meant, obviously, as pure comedy. This is not actually a cat being tossed into Mel's Hole, but here is the way he represented it would sound. It's the second one that gets me. Not the first one. The first one is pretty good, as you hear the echo of the cat disappearing down the hole. It's the second little one. There he goes. That was what somebody thought it would sound like, Mel.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, you decided that you would lower a sheep 1,500 feet down as low as the ice had gone into the hole.
Well, we had decided that we were going to take the sheep and put them in a crate and lower them into the hole. We led the sheep to the hole, and it just started freaking out. I mean, you know, we didn't make...
Like every other animal.
Yeah, it was like totally...
Not happy.
It was not happy. And I, you know, I have a lot of respect for animals, it's amazing what animals really know and what they sense.
Well, you're right about that. And so if it was terrified...
It was terrified, so the bass got the sheep away from the hole. And again, a lot of what I'm going to say now, I am thoroughly ashamed of.
That's all right. Just give us the raw truth.
He basically stunned the sheep by knocking it between the eyes.
Mm.
Got into the crate. Got the cable and line hooked up to it, so you know it was all securely attached. And
right.
Just about when we got to the hole, the sheep just started making horrible noises. So he stunned it, but he didn't kill the sheep, okay? He just knocked it out.
Yeah.
And so it was live when he went in the box, and then it stirred when it got to the hole.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was just making the worst god-awful noises. We were getting it about ready to let it go into the hole.
Yeah.
And
even though it had been hit in the head?
It stirred by the time we got it crated up into the crate. There was enough room for it to lie down, and I guess if it wanted to, it could stand up. I don't know. Yeah. This is not pleasant to talk about, but we take the sheep, and it's screaming, and just the most piercing, horrible, ghastly noises coming out of this crate. Until we get it right over where we're going to let it into the hole, and then everything just stops dead silent. Mm. There's not a sound coming out of that box.
Mm.
There's movement coming out of the box. You can still tell.
But no sound.
There's no sound anymore.
Well, there's something about this hole and sound, isn't there?
I guess we will make that assumption. And so we started winching this sheep down into the hole, and... you can feel from the line as we're lowering that the thing is struggling, fighting. I don't know if it's screaming down there, but we're not hearing this thing screaming. And I think we got about halfway down into the hole, and it was about to say 700 feet. And then the any movement that might have been coming from the crate, we couldn't...
couldn't feel it anymore.
No, we couldn't feel anything. So I don't know, at 700 feet or so, about half the line, what happened over there. When we got to at this point here, the original experiment with the ice, you know, we were kind of nonchalant about it. You know, we just kind of lowered it down there. Well, with this one here, we were all gathered around the top of the hole there, looking in, seeing
probably
what's going on.
Very apprehensive.
You know, this is a serious business here. And when we hit the bottom, we felt up there. We felt like a vibration on the on the collar at a point in time when it was down there, and it's kind of hard to describe.
Well, what do you mean when you hit the bottom?
When we hit the bottom of the rope, the cable line assembly that we had.
When it was all the way playing out?
Yeah, when we got there, we felt and it vibrated, or it felt like a vibration, and sort of like a staticky electricity type kind of feeling. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That we could feel up there.
Yeah.
And so we got it down to, 1,500 feet, and we left it there for about a half an hour.
Mm.
And then we decided to, bring it back up.
Right, sure.
So we're hoisting this thing up here, cranking away, getting this thing up on there, and it's kind of a job. So we finally get up to the surface, and we got the box out of there, and the one thing we notice is there isn't any movement in the box. okay?
No.
There's no box. We got the box there. And but the box from the outside looked pretty normal. You know, it didn't look like some weird transformation had occurred or anything.
Right.
Well, I wanted to describe to you we're going to tell you about the ice that came up that didn't melt.
Right.
What it felt like. You get a lot of electronic equipment, and you get those do not eat packets.
Oh, yes.
The desiccant.
Yes.
Ever take the desiccant out of the packet?
No, never. No?
Well, if you take it out there and you feel the desiccant between your fingers, that's kind of what it felt like. That's the best thing I could describe it at. I had that sort of... you try it someday, and you'll...
I've always just thrown those away.
Oh, well, you don't eat them, obviously.
No.
Okay, so I just struck me there that, you know, I'm trying to describe this thing in the detail that I can, and so I just led back to the desiccant. But we open up the crate, and the sheep is dead. It looks like a sheep, okay? It looks like a normal sheep over
right.
there. And
it's dead.
It's dead. There's no sign of life. You know, you poke at it, there's nothing going on with this sheep here. He's dead. Well, I'm saying here, but that's a generic he. And I don't know from sheep, okay? You can show me a sheep, I can't tell what it is.
Gotcha. Me either.
Okay. But we take it out of the box, and one of the best lays it on the table that we have over there, and he is going to dissect the sheep.
Oh.
Now, on the outside, the sheep looked just fine. You know, the hair, you know, that the wool, whatever sheep has, looked fine. Looked like we said that the sheep looked like how he looked when we sent him into the hole.
Minus a bump on the head, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, and he stirred from that. But he started cutting into the sheep, mm-hmm. and it looked like the sheep had been cooked. It was, the flesh was hot underneath, you know, when he started cutting through the sheep here. It looked like the sheep had been cooked.
Oh, my.
Now these Bass guys, they're pretty good at butchering a sheep there, and they know their way around a sheep, and so they pretty much can butcher and they know what to expect when you open up a sheep.
Right.
You know, so... You know, we got the sheep on this table that we, you know, just eat that. And, you know, this guy is cutting the sheep open here. And he gets it so he can look inside and see the internal organs like he's going to eviscerate the sheep.
Right.
Except they're not what we expected.
What do you mean?
It looks like there was gel in the cavity there. And something that looked like this huge tumor. And almost taking up the entire length of the body cavity.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's pretty hideous.
Oh, God.
I'm getting kind of sick. You get kind of sick thinking about this thing, too, but I was getting kind of sick when I was there. So I was I wasn't as close to all of this as I wanted, you know, would want to be if I was a scientific observer. But there's this huge tumor taking up most of the... Where the internal organs would be, the heart, the lungs, whatever parts the sheep comes with, they weren't there.
And what are these Bass guys who are doing this saying at this point?
Well, some of them are muttering plenty of expletives over here.
Uh-huh.
And they're freaked out there. And I remember saying, "See, I told you, you didn't want to go into that hole." You know,
that's right. And the two guys who volunteered my first hour are probably rethinking it right now, too.
Well, if they want to collect on some life insurance, fine, go for it.
That's what one of them said, yeah.
Anyway, so we got this gel, and the guy's good with a knife here, and he kind of is able to get the tumor out of this thing here.
Yeah.
And I say it's about as big as the sheep's cavity. I don't know, 2 feet? Long.
In other words, the tumor was almost taking up the entire inside of
Okay, so you got this tumor, and we could detect, we could see that the tumor had some movement to it.
What?
Yes, it had movement to it, and I'm going to describe it like a heart beating.
Oh. But
there's not a beating of a heart.
Oh.
Just like a pulsing from this tumor.
A pulsing tumor. Oh, my God, Mel.
So we get to the point where we got this tumor out there, and, he's working on trying to cut it open. It's like really a tough
thing to cut into, but he was finally able to get into it.
Yeah.
And, boy, I'm going to tell you here. He opens it up there, and inside this tumor is what appeared to be a fetal seal. Like, you know, like...
A fetal what?
Seal, like a pinniped, a thing that lives in the ocean that
yes.
balances balls on his nose.
Yes.
It's about 18 inches long. You know, it's got the flippers on it. And it looks like a little seal.
Huh.
You know, it looks just like your basically your little seal. Except it had what, and I don't know, I don't want people to freak out, but it had what looked to me like human eyes. Like, you know, a human being. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know what, like, cat eyes look like.
Oh, yeah.
You know what dog eyes look like.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what seal eyes look like, but I know what human eyes look like.
Sure you do.
And this thing looks like it had human eyes. And the thing was alive, but it was connected to the tumor, like with this umbilical cord.
Holy mackerel, Mel.
And we could see the seal moving his eyes, and it was... And I'm calling it a seal, okay, but... I have no idea what the heck this thing is, okay? I'm calling it a seal. But it's opening its eyes, it's closing it, the flippers are moving, it's still in connected to its tumor there. And then we noticed, and I noticed, that it seemed to be studying us. It seemed to be looking at us. That was the feeling I got. It seemed to be regarding us while we were looking at it. And so that's the feeling I got off of the seal. And then this thing separated from the tumor without our assistance. We thought, well, maybe we will cut this thing free.
Right there on the table.
It right there, and it moved about a little on the table.
Yeah.
You know, so we're all standing back at that point because this thing is loose, you know.
I'd be way back.
And you know, we're watching this seal. And again, that's the only way I could describe it because it looked like a seal to me.
Human eyes.
And then I felt... well, I just felt I was in the presence of something extraordinary, something beyond extraordinary, something like, I don't know. I'm not a religious man, but I felt in that category of having a religious thing there. This was just such a stunning thing to witness.
Well, something that far from our understanding would appear to be magic or religion or whatever you want to call it, I'm sure. Yeah, so what God's name happened to this thing?
Well, we left it there, and it began to, you know, it just kind of looked at us there, and, one of the Basques suggested we kill it, you know, and, you know, just kind of club it, and unfortunately, and,
is that what they did?
No, basically cooler heads prevailed. The thing was moving around on a table, and it finally moved to the edge of the table.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like struggling, but it got to the edge of the table.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was going to fall off.
Right.
So I go up to it at this point, because I'm just like out of my head with I don't know what I'm in the presence of. And it looked directly at me when I got up to it, and it seemed, you know, it just seemed to have a contact with me. And I got this compelling feeling to pick it up and place it on the ground. And I did that. I took this thing and I put it on the ground by a table.
Yeah.
My hands were slimy from the seal, because it had like this goo that was not only in the cavity, but also inside the tumor. And I'm just calling it a tumor because I have no vocabulary for this.
Right.
And I just moved my hands past my face before I decided to wipe them off on the rag at the table there.
Right.
And it smelled like ozone.
Like ozone
smells like?
Ozone, of course I do, yes.
That's what it smelled like when I, because I thought it would be some like sort of weird organic-y smell.
Yeah.
You know, some sort of like disgusting, I just thought it would smell disgusting. It smelled like ozone.
Okay.
So this thing is lying on the ground, and we're all looking at this thing here, and it's like looking at each of us in turn.
In other words, intelligently.
Yes. Yes. We must have been there just absolutely transfixed by this, I'll call it a creature now, for like 2 hours.
What was it doing during those 2 hours? I mean,
studying each one of us.
It wasn't moving around that much?
Just its head. Because we had gathered a safe distance away from it, but not too safe, you know. So we could easily see it, and it could easily see us. Because at this point here, even the bravest bass were, like, you know, kind of freaked out.
I'd have been long gone, Mel.
Again, the bass are great.
All right, well, hold,
no fear.
Hold it right there, Mel. Here's this thing on the ground now. Not moving around much, but carefully studying each and every one of them who have by now retreated to a safe distance. That's where we'll pick up when we get back. I'm Art Bell.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Well, I knew that Mel had found another hole, but I didn't know anything about all of this. This is incredible. Pretty freaky stuff. A number of questions for Mel. We'll try and get to the phones in this last half hour. Everybody stay right where you are. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Once again, Mel Waters. So here's this thing staring at each and every one of you, examining you, obviously intelligent in some way. And it looks like a seal, not like a sheep at all.
Nothing like a sheep.
Yeah. That came out of this godforsaken tumor that was in this thing. What happened?
Well, you know, I got this. The seal, and he's, you know, he's kind of grinding, waddles around a little bit in the direction of the hole, and then he's just sort of watching us some more, and we're sort of kind of at a safe distance, but we kind of encroach upon a little bit there, and I'm telling the bass, hey, you're the big brave bass here, you know, don't be afraid of this thing here. I'm just, you know, just an ordinary old guy here, just so you know, we went up to it there, and it just looked at us here, and the look that it was giving us was. The only way I can describe it, it was like the most compassionate look that I'd ever seen from any face.
Mm-hmm.
It just, the way the eyes were looking and feeling this. And so some amount of time elapsed, and the little seal there starts to waddle again towards the hole, and I get this feeling that it wants to go up on the ledge, on the collar.
Right.
So I pick it up in my hands and I set it right there on there. And it moves around a little bit, and then at this point we're pretty comfortable with this thing. I am. And my comrades there are pretty comfortable with it. I mean, we're not like freaked out anymore like we were. And maybe it's just, you know, we're over the shock, or maybe we are in shock. But that look that it was giving us, it didn't seem like an evil thing or a horrible thing. It seemed like...
I'm sure you were in some state of shock.
Yeah. So it's up there, and then it moves around. I don't know how, maybe an hour he's on the, it...
Is on the
on
ledge.
The collar. It yeah. looks at us, it actually nodded at us. It made like a slow nod. And he turned around and went back into the hole. At this point, we were close to it, so we watched him go all the way down as far as we could see, and we didn't have high-powered lights or anything, so it no sound, nothing like that. It just...
Into the hole, and that was it.
Into the hole. And so we were all just moved, just
drained. I'm drained telling you this, Art, because it is such an enormous thing to go through.
You realize it sounds like an unbelievable tale from Alien or something. I mean, it sounds...
Well, I don't know what it sounds like. You know, all I can do now is to relay it,
yep.
and then try to stand back from it.
All right, question for you, Mel. Does anybody have any photographs of this hole?
I went up there from the natives to the hole. I basically camped at that property.
Right.
I didn't come and go. No one came and go. We had what we had over there. And so we didn't bring photographs. I personally didn't want to, you know, I thought to myself, look, this would be great. We get this all on film, on video, whatever.
Right.
But I did not want to encroach upon what they had, you know. And if they came to me and said, look, Mel, why don't we go to town, go home, get our stuff, you know, and try to video, you know, fine. I would have said that, but I was not going to broach the subject with them. You know, I mean, I mean, to me, it was an enormous privilege to go where I'd gone at that
Understood.
Point.
Are you likely to go back to the hole?
Yes.
You're going to?
I will. I will let you know that we decided we thought we would bury the sheep's carcass and the tumor.
Yeah.
We still had that, and we decided it was just best to take the whole thing and put everything back into the hole where it all came from.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, we just let it be. We had a tarp on the we just dumped the hole. Everything back into the hole where it came from. I didn't know what else to do. We thought about burying it, and it just didn't. I don't know. It just didn't seem right. That I thought it would. And so that's what we did. I want to tell you something that is I believe related to this experience.
All right.
And that is prior to going to Nevada. This was in late August. I was diagnosed with a particularly lethal form of esophageal cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
This was a six, you know, like the kind that you have 6 months to live, but, you know, they're just telling you that. You know, that there's, you know, like nothing they can do about it, but it was very fast growing. And one of the reasons I came back here was to see the same doctor because I started feeling a lot better. And my last examination with the doctor finds me cancer-free. I can't explain it.
Then you could document this, right? Because
he had, yes, because they had whatever stuff diagnosing the cancer, and I went back to the doctor, and they could find no evidence of any cancer.
Is it your feeling that your proximity to the hole or something about the hole changed this?
I think it was the seal.
The seal?
I think it was the seal.
The seal?
I described this thing as this huge tumor. And that's what I had. But I described it as a tumor because that was the only vocabulary I had to describe it with.
Gotcha.
And I handled this.
Well, that's right, you did.
And I smelled the ozone from it, and it just, the look that it gave me, there was something going on. I can't say, look, I was communing with the seal and I was, you know, had this conversation with this seal. No, I can't say that. But what I can say is that I had this feeling of such incredible compassion from the seal that ultimately went back into the hole. We just said, you know, that was it.
And what was the conversation like after all this was over, Mel, between the Basques and the Native Americans and yourself?
Okay.
And
well, First of all, the best that I were with, they were young guys, okay. And I think before this kind of your kind of shiftless sort of characters, you know, partiers and all of that, and they were like just profoundly moved. I mean, they were just had stuff going on in their mind after that. That, you know, they had been to another place, another time, anything. Their reality had been all changed. Now, I had the opportunity before I left Nevada to speak right before I left. You know, I went back in to civilization and spoke with a Basque elder.
Yes.
And this was the elderly fellow that I was referring to that told me some of the history of that he was in there, you know, for, you know, he remembered it from being a young man, and he described it to me and all of this stuff here. And we had his thing was he himself would go there to that area for spiritual connection, that there was something very spiritual, very primal that was going on. He was a tough guy to talk to in some ways, because he was more schooled in Basque than he was in English, but he got English out enough for me to understand. And so we talked actually at great length about the meaning of this. We did have some of the Native American people that I was work with at that particular thing, because it was kind of like a party sort of atmosphere out there. You know, we were drinking what they like to drink, and, you know, and eating the good Basque food and all of that. And it was a good experience there to kind of decompress from all of this. And so, but he could not relate to me any experience like what we had, except he knew, he almost expected what it was that I was telling him. He just totally, firmly, completely believed what it was that I was telling him. There was no surprise to him at all in this thing here. I got this, like, you know, really old bass guy there, and he's just taking all this in stride and nodding, and, you know.
Yeah.
So he knows there's something enormous, of great enormity there, and my goal is to go back. I have agreed to work with the people I was working with the herbs and live amongst them and spend some time with the tribal members and some time with the Basque and spend it. And
are you going to do anything else with the hole itself?
With the one in Nevada?
Yes.
Well, I'm at this point, I don't know what we're going to do. You know, I come back, I'm overjoyed that I'm cancer free. I felt so good after that experience that I knew something happened to my body. So I was glad to get back and have it confirmed that the doctor said yes. But I do plan to go back. I do plan to study it. I hope to be a better human being about this and not send innocent animals into it or what have you. That to me, I guess I still can't believe that I allowed that to happen, but I did, you know.
Well, I appreciate your telling the story straight out this way. That's the only way to do it.
That's the only way to do it. I got to tell you, I'm not selling a book.
Obviously,
I don't have a newsletter.
Right.
There are no Mel's Hole T-shirts. Mel's Hole.
Not that you produced anyway. I think.
Well, nothing that I have done. There are no Mel's Hole diaper pails or anything like that. I mean, to me,
Mel's Hole diaper pail. Who thought that one up?
Well, I mean, you know, they will commercialize everything in the world,
and
have no part of this. This has been just an extraordinary ride for me. Okay, it's been like nothing I could have ever imagined in anyone's life, to go where I've been, to be where I was, to go up, to go down, to be in the presence of such an amazing thing. And my only goal is to leave a permanent record
of what happened.
Well, how closely are you willing to identify the location of this new hole?
Well,
just northern Nevada, is that? As
I'm gonna put it there. I don't want the tribal people up there to be overwhelmed by people, you know, rushing out of Reno to get up there and
right, which they would
and doing all of that. I am going to go back.
Do you think you could politely approach the Basque and without identifying the specific area, get photographs?
If I feel comfortable, I will do that. I will also at this point, and I just have a little bit of what I have that happened in my Nevada experience left, but I know we're running out of time, is that anyone that can help me understand some of these things, if they can send an email to me, I'd appreciate it.
All right. You have an email address, right?
Yeah. This is Mel Waters.
Right.
At ATTBI. That's like ball igloo. B-I. ATTBI.com.
That's Mel Waters at ATT. That's Tom.
Right.
B as in boy, I as in India. ATTBI.com, right?
Right, and
Mel Waters at ATTBI.com. What is it you want?
I cannot promise, you know, like a whole, you know, like to maintain a dialogue with people, but...
Well, what do you want?
There are other people out there that have had any type of understanding of this that can make some sense to me, that knows what's going on. I'm going to listen with fascination to your program on the Hollow Earth business?
Yes.
Because that's something I don't know about, but I sure like to know.
Well, there may be a relationship, obviously.
And so that I'm going to look at.
But, I mean, what do you want in email? Do you want some support? You're going to get media contacts?
What I really want is this: the people that have good, serious opinions about this, that understand some of this. That I described a lot of things that occurred. I don't understand any of them. I only described them. You know, I mean, going back to what I started with talking about Ellensburg and bringing it up to today.
Yeah, get it.
I'll put it out.
You want somebody who might understand
right.
all of this,
and that you know may have been studying these types of matters, that have had theories, whatever. That's good, but I'm going to be away from civilization for a good part of time, so it's going to be difficult because I'm going to be going back probably mid-February, mid-March, somewhere in that timeline, and then I'm going to go up there for a period of time. I'll probably give you another contact when I get back to some sort of civilization, probably from Nevada, but I probably will get in touch with you again.
Okay. By all means, Mel, please try and see if they will allow you, I mean, without identifying the area, just to get some kind
of... You just want, like, a photo?
Some kind of photographic evidence, okay. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to be afraid that people are going to be scouring that terror server now that I get that out there.
Well, they probably will.
I want to bring the final thing, because we were talking about the Basque elder that I was talking to, and it was a very profound experience for me to talk with him. And though he was not that much older than me, I felt that he was a great deal older than me.
Wiser?
Beyond that. So I know I can respect that. But we were sitting, you know, there and talking well into the night, drinking that good Basque drink that they like to drink and all that good stuff.
Yes.
And he got tired and he was going to retire for the night. And he took my hand, you know, to clasp it. And in my hand, he put something in my hand when he was leaving.
Yes.
And he closed my hand.
Yes.
And he just told me, put that away. So he said, put that away. So I put it in my pocket and sat around talking with his family. And someone said, aren't you going to look at what, you know, the great-grandfather gave you?
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, okay. And so I take it out of my pocket, and it's a 1943 Roosevelt dime. They told me he had found a similar packet of Roosevelt dimes
Oh, my God.
Up there in Nevada, Chinese red envelope. And they said, and I said to him, I said, you know how valuable this thing is? I said, you know what this would sell at a coin auction? They said, no, you have to have it. You need to have this.
Do you have it now?
I have it. It's in my hand as we speak.
How about a photograph of that mill?
If I can scan a 1943 dime,
yeah,
you will have it.
Or you got somebody who's got a really good quality digital camera, go to the macro setting and take a very close photograph
close
of it.
Close up. But
can you do that?
I will do everything I can to do that.
You know my email address, right?
Yes, we can do that. But that's what he left me with. And he said to me that it was very, very, very important. Or they told me, because they finished the rest of it. Told me this is something I had to have. Now, I hadn't told them anything. In fact, outside the fellow in Ellensburg, no one else knew about the dimes and the red envelope. But he found one out there. And he had it for years. I think he had it since the 40s, to be honest with you. Late 1943.
Mel, all I can tell you is we are out of time. This was one hell of a story.
I'm drenched.
I can tell. I can hear it in your voice. Mel, thank you for being here tonight. Thanks for catching us up on what was and what is. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Take care, my friend, and I really mean take care.
I will.
Good night.
Good night, Art.
Yikes. From the high desert, I have no further comment. I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.
Continuing the story of Mel and Mel's Hole from just last Friday, December 20th, here is Art and Mel Waters on the best of Coast to Coast AM.
From the high desert of the great American Southwest, good evening. The moon out there is full, the night's still and cold, and it's going to be a very interesting program, and so I suggest you strap in, turn up the radio, and get ready. Coming up in a moment, a surprise visit from Mel Waters. That would be Mel, or Mel's Hole fame. A lot of people said he was dead. Recently, I've had some communication from people who thought he was dead. Well, he's not dead. He's here tonight, and he's going to fill you in on, you know, kind of what's happened since. Coming right up. Here from an undisclosed location, unless he wishes to disclose it, is Mel Waters. Mel, welcome to the program.
Well, hello there, Art Bell.
Welcome back to the program, is more like it.
Well, thank you. All I'll say is I'm in my nephew's apartment.
Okay, that'll do.
Okay.
All right, Mel, what we need is an update, if you have one, to Washington, an update, of course, on the whole here in my state, Nevada.
Right. Okay. First of all, I'm not dead.
That's a good thing, Mel.
And I did have a very, very, very close brush with death back around Memorial Day.
Maybe that's where people got
it. But I am doing well, and I'm not yet ready to eat the big green wiener yet. Anyway, yes, I do want to bring people up to date and let them know how things are going.
All right, good. Where to begin?
Well, I'm going to talk to you about kind of where we left off in Nevada.
All right.
I think that would be, is it Nevada or Nevada?
I say Nevada. I
wonder about that sometimes.
Just try either one. We'll answer to it. Whatever.
Anyway, the one in your state here,
yes.
Right, I told you that we had lowered a bucket of ice into the hole there in your state. And that,
you're going to want to tell us any more about where the hole is.
I think that might end up coming out here, or I think people will be able to discern where it is in your state.
All right.
I think a lot of people have got a very good idea, and I'm going to tell you that the location where the hole is at has been under helicopter surveillance almost I don't mean constantly, like 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
But there have been flyovers of that area
frequently,
like weekly, frequently.
Yeah.
But there's been no contact with the Basque that are there, that are in camp around there.
That's pretty odd, considering the military cordon that was thrown around the hole in Washington.
Well, yeah, that is, and I've yet to discern how they were able to mobilize so quickly on that. That's still a great mystery.
Nevertheless, you said you're reminding us of a bucket of ice.
Yeah, one thing that when I said they have had flyovers of the hole there in your state, I was told something very interesting, and that is that from certain approaches to where the area that they're in, you can see the encampment of people. You could see the Basque if you're standing there, say, on the hillside. But you cannot see the flange around the hole. I told you that with this hole, there was like a metal collar, a flange around. You cannot see that from a certain distance. You can see everything else. The flange is huge. It's a very large metallic structure, you know, that it provides like a collar for this thing.
Mel, your opinion.
Yeah.
Does this hole go down somewhere near the center of the Earth? I mean, how far?
Well, of course, you know, people know what my experience with it was, lowering all that fishing line into it, and I'm absolutely certain that I got 80,000 feet of line into it, which is, I don't know, 15 miles or so of line. I mean, that's a crazy thing to do, but I did. I'm just one of those people that are determined to get to the bottom of things.
Only you never did get to the bottom.
When I was at that level, that was my first contact with you. That, you know, when I reached that point there, that's when I said, I better reveal what I'm doing to the audience to find out what am I dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, and so this whole thing started. Well, let me tell you about what had occurred. You know, we lowered that bucket of ice. We pulled it up there. We had a bucket of ice up there at the surface. That bucket of ice at the surface had melted completely. We brought up the bucket of ice from a depth of, I believe it was 1,000 feet.
Uh-huh.
We lowered it down 1,000 feet. We brought it up. The ice was unmelted. So we stuck it on the campfire there in the metal bucket to see if we could melt it. Well, the thing caught fire, as I said.
The ice caught fire.
Ice caught fire, was burning. And it was a kind of a strange fire, but it generated heat. I don't know. I still, to this, well, I might be getting ahead of myself, but it must have been some sort of chemical reaction. Somehow the water was changed.
Yeah.
Touched the ice, you know, and it felt like ice, but not cold. And when we came, that's when we took it, you know, before we set it on fire.
Like ice, but not cold.
Right. I mean, it wasn't cold, and so was what was going on here. So we lowered it, we put it in the bucket. Well, I told you that it caught fire, and they eventually one of these Basque fellows took the bucket of ice, set it in the back of his pickup truck, drove off, and took it home and stuck it inside of his wood stove.
Had the ice been put out?
No, it was just kind of, you know.
Well, I mean, he had it in his vehicle, wasn't it?
He just had it in the back of his pickup truck.
Trying to tell me it was burning while it was in there?
Yeah. Well, he wanted to take it home and put it in his wood stove to see if it would keep him warm.
Well, so he did that.
Yeah, well, the Basque are kind of crazy people. Are you in any way familiar with the Basque in general or specific or just kind of heard of them?
No, of course I've heard of them, but I mean, no.
The Basque are very well known in your state. In fact, the university up there of Nevada at Reno has a huge section on the Basque.
I bet, yeah. So he took it home. It's not that weird. I mean, it was burning.
Yeah.
Ice burning is weird.
Yes, and he took this home and set it in his wood stove, and it kept them toasty warm throughout the winter. Throughout the winter, and for
you're telling me this one piece of ice.
Well, what we did is in this bucket, metal bucket, we stuck in a bag of like 7-Eleven ice, you know, the kind that you buy at the store, you know, ice cubes.
Yes,
that's what it was. That's what we put in there. Nothing else. Just the metal bucket, lowered down into this hole. We get it and we stick it on a fire, and it's burning. Okay, so anyway, this goes on for quite some time, and he sets it in his wood stove, keeps them warm, and I imagine that today it'd still be burning or is burning. I have no...
The last you heard, it was still going?
Well, you know, we're going to go to probably what Paul Harvey says the rest of the story here, because this is what I've been told.
All right.
He says, you know, when you have a wood stove, and you're burning wood, you generally will put a kettle on top of that wood stove.
Yeah.
And, you know, to make have hot water for coffee and to humidify the air.
Sure, whatever.
You know, it dries out the air terribly. Well, this Basque fellow, he just did just that there, and he noticed there that the air was, like, really, really dry. He was always thirsty, and his skin was, like, flaking. I mean, this was, like, I don't know, he must have been living in humidity lower than what you face out there in the desert, you know. And so, you know, he's got this kettle up on top there, you know, trying to humidify the air. And one night he notices that, I don't know, it might have been the angle of the light or just whatever it was, but the steam from the kettle looked like it was being absorbed into the stove. And we're not saying, like, through the vents or, you know, through the door or whatever.
Wait a minute. The steam from the kettle, which would have been going up, would be...
Would be coming
back down and then absorbed by the stove.
Yeah,
right?
It was like dispersing and then coming around and just like I guess the word to describe is lingering around, but it looked like it was being absorbed by the stove. That's the I think that's the best picture I can.
That's weird.
That is strange.
Of course, this is already really weird. We've got ice that's burning eternally so far, and I can picture it.
Okay, so I mean, I want to be able to, because this is what I've been told, but I have absolute belief in, you know, the person that told me this, and you know, this goes on. Anyway, you know, the stove is out there, and it's producing heat, and this guy is real happy, and even though he's, like, real thirsty and really dry, you know, and then one day this guy comes home, you know, he goes out and does his thing, and comes home, and he notices that the stove had crashed through the hearth and through the floorboards of his cabin.
What?
It just, like, went right down. It just broke. I mean, you know, it was kind of a flimsy cabin, you know, but it was able to support the weight of his wood stove and his,
So now the stove with his eternally burning ice is now through the floor.
It's in the ground. It's actually in, on, like, the dirt, maybe. Fell like about a foot into the ground at that point.
I wonder if this thing has gone back from whence it came.
Well, that's what I want to know, and we're going to continue along with this here. But anyway, the stove is sitting down there. Now, this guy, you know, sometimes I wonder about these guys, but, you know, he's not too bright. So what he does is he patches up the stove pipe.
Yeah.
And so it connects to the chimney where, you know, the flue, all that stuff there.
Yeah.
And you know, he's kind of living in this cabin with this, you know, stove.
You mean he's still using the stove?
Yeah.
He just extended the pipe?
Yes, that's exactly what he did. You know, he just kind of lowered it down there. And as far as I could tell, though, it doesn't give off any gas or any, no smoke or anything.
He made no attempts to bring it back up to fix the floor and do it right, huh?
No. No, he didn't. You know, he continues to live with it, you know, and basically about, I don't know, a week, maybe 2 weeks later, he comes home, and the entire cabin has collapsed.
What?
Around the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Everything has collapsed around it. In fact, all there is around the side of the cabin is piles of wood dust. Wood dust.
So in other words, his cabin disintegrated.
It basically looked like all of the moisture that was in the wood had been sucked out of it completely to the point that it could no longer exist as wood.
Wow. Now, this is pretty interesting because so far it's pretty consistent, that's for sure. This thing... reabsorbed its own moisture. It absorbed so much moisture this man had terrible skin trouble. Still, he kept it going. And now he absorbed all, all the moisture out of the wood.
He had wood furniture in there, you know, his bed and a chair or whatever.
Yep.
Wood dust. You know, you could see the different colors of wood dust. And at that point, he abandons the cabin and gets the heck out of there.
Understood.
He says, hey, enough is enough. So he moves in with one of his brothers.
Yes.
And they were over there, and about a month later, he goes back to the cabin to show it to his brothers, and they find that the stove had sunk to, like, 5 feet into the ground.
This thing's on its way.
It's 5 feet into the ground, and it is still generating heat.
And still going.
And, you know, at that point, all the dust had blown away, and, you know, you got a few nails around there. And what you have is a rectangular hole, just a little bit bigger than a stove. So can you imagine a rectangular wood stove sinking into the ground, leaving its imprint?
and there's a little bit of room around it, but not a lot. And, he described that the hole that it made was also, like, really, 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 really smooth all around it. You think of a hole in dirt.
Like it's burning its way through. Like it's
melted into some sort of glassy type.
Maybe it's doing the same thing, and it's taking away all the moisture in the soil below it as it goes.
This is the point where the basketball contacts me.
Okay.
And they have a way of getting a hold of me. And I say something that I probably shouldn't say on the air, but
something like holy smokes?
Well, yeah, that would be it.
Uh-huh.
Holy smokes. then I did something which I thought I would never do.
What?
And that is I contacted one of the people that were my contacts when I was in Australia.
Okay.
Okay, I had a number, and I described the situation to this guy here. And he pretty much said the same thing that I said, holy smoke. And he tells me it's, like, really important that I tell him where the cabin was.
Of course.
And how to get to it.
Well, I mean, after all, Mel, this is, before it disappears from sight into a creation of a new hole, this is something that could be immediately researched.
Well, so I talked to the Basque, and all the land that I'm talking about is on public land. You know, so the cabin, you know, the guy's like a squatter out there, you know, out in the boondocks. He's got a shack that, you know, if it burned down, he wouldn't care about it. He'd just put up another one, you know, a couple of feet away.
Gotcha.
But he decides, okay, well, there's no way to really trace me, you know, to here, so I'm not going to get any trouble. So we say, okay, I get back with this guy here. This is exactly where to find it, you know, tell him how to get there. And so at that point, there's a team dispatched to the site of the former cabin.
A team
of people show up there.
Way to go.
And now this guy, this fast fellow there, he's got a nice vantage point. He knows all the land around there. He knows where he can sit out there and squat and look around. So he's got a pretty good view of where his cabin used to be. So he's out there, you know, watching what's going on.
Yes.
Now, he said he wasn't sure if they were military guys or what kind of guys they were. I would imagine that some of them had to be scientists. Of some sort, and you know, they're out there for a while, and shortly after that there's like a bunch of heavy duty construction equipment, cranes and things that are brought out there.
Here we go.
Yeah. And then this is like, you know, big stuff, you know, super big stuff. But you know, he's up there and he's watching this, and the people down there at the cabin are really like struggling to get this stove out of the ground.
Yeah.
And at that point, I assumed that it sunk even deeper than it, than it was. And that last time, he said it was about like 5 feet deep. So this thing was pretty deep out there. They keep on bringing it in heavier and heavier and heavier equipment, bigger cranes. They bring in multiple cranes. They're still, I guess, not able to get a purchase on this thing to lift it out.
Hey, Mel, I wonder if this is the way the holes got made in the first place.
I do not know. What, you know, what the mechanism here is.
Because so far, what you've described sounds like it's making a new hole.
From that standpoint, it sure as heck does. And, I mean, you know, obviously this thing is sinking deeper and deeper into the ground. And they are, you know, it's like a total, you know, they're totally baffled with how to get this thing out here. I assume that when they're trying to bring it up there, that they're breaking off pieces of the stove because, you know, it's made out of cast iron or whatever. It must be busting up there. That the thing is really heavy. Well, eventually what they do is they drop some chains into the ground, and then they pour some water in there, into the ground.
Yeah.
and I don't know if this is what happened, but this is what I assumed happened, is somehow the water and the chains and the metal all congealed together, you know, kind of like held fast like glue to the structure and everything that was in the hole.
Yeah.
Well, eventually they were able to get this thing out of the ground and hoist it up, and they were using more than one crane at this point. Now, I don't know a lot about cranes, but usually they could pick up a lot of stuff. They had several cranes working on getting this thing out, so it must have weighed some huge amount.
God,
talking like
fascinating. What? Okay. So the weight alone would have broken it through the floor. The weight certainly would
initially,
wouldn't have dug the hole though. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah. And so, So they finally get this thing out of the ground using multiple cranes, the biggest ones they can get. This guy said these things were like monster cranes. They get it up, and they load it onto the biggest truck this guy had ever seen in his life.
I mean, yeah.
This was bigger than big, and they haul that thing away. It is like gone, you know, there is over there, you know, and so they just took the stove away. I don't know if he got a good look to see what the stove looked like, but they loaded whatever was in there, detached the chains from the hooks and stuff, and trucked this thing off.
All of this, in essence, just to get this burning ice, really.
That's what they got. But this guy here, as soon as I talked to him, he knew something was going down, and something had gotten, well, my impression was it had gotten, like, out of control.
And all of this just from something you lowered into the hole here in Nevada.
That is correct.
Aye, aye, aye. All right. Hold on. Hold it right where you are, Mel. We're going to break here. We'll be right back. Current circumstances of the world considered, you should listen to the words of this song. It's dead right. From the high desert, I'm with Mel Waters, and I'm Art Bell.
Gonna take a lot of love to change the way things are. Gonna take a lot of love. We won't get too far. So if you look in my direction, and we don't see eye to eye,
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is, and I've got Mel Waters here. We're getting the continuing saga, or at least closure to this point, of the Mel's whole stories. That's plural. We'll get back to Mel in a moment. Once again, Mel Waters. Mel, Marilyn in Tulsa, Oklahoma asks, was there any sign of radioactivity? An obvious question.
I don't think these guys are capable of doing, you know, determining if that. None of the people have been around the hole in your state, or the hole in Washington, or this other site where the stove had gone into the ground, had experienced any sickness or anything that I guess would, you know,
be indicative of radio.
Anything that made him like truly sick.
Have you been back to our Nevada hole?
No, I have not. And the reason why is that I feel at this point I am people can follow me around, and I don't want to lead anyone there at this point. You know?
Have you detected people following you?
Well, I'm. Well, I'll tell you, some of the people that I was trying to find have found me. I mean, and I have not left a trail of breadcrumbs out there. But so
you're not an easy guy to find.
I'm not an easy guy to find. In fact, that is also my message to Charlotte, and that is that
I'm not around because people badger me all the time, even though I don't have a nickel in my pocket.
Actually, I would be aware of those you refer to. Let's not talk any more about it.
Okay. That's
listen,
it.
Listen, the whole in Nevada,
right.
Eventually, Mel, we've got to give scientists or
yes.
somebody access to one of these things.
I have a feeling...
Before the bulldozers come in with the suits and the military uniforms.
This has been my discussion with the Basque over there, is that at this point here, it's time to basically come clean on all of this stuff here, let someone
exactly.
from a university
exactly.
out there. They don't want... I mean, they're just there, you know. I mean, I can't see them profiting by it or anything. It's on public land. I mean, it doesn't belong to them.
A lot of people, of course, probably haven't heard this whole story, and I'll tell you now, Mel, we're going to take this segment, and we're going to repeat Mel's Hole 2 on Christmas, and so we're going to take the segment we're in right now, play it back then, so Merry Christmas.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Art, and that is, boy, I sure got a lot of heat about the sheep and that...
Yeah, you want to briefly tell that again very quickly.
Well...
It is a sinful core.
This is good. Maybe I can lead into some more of this because there has been some more contact with...
Good.
That. Okay, what we did is some of the Basque were really like crazy, and some of them wanted to be actually lowered into the hole, and that's after we brought that burning ice up to the ground.
Yeah.
And I said that, hey, you don't want to do this. You don't want to send a human being down there. So they decided to lower sheep.
Yeah.
And they winched the sheep. Well, I don't want to get into the grisly details, but the sheep goes into the hole.
Right.
Goes down 1,000 feet. Bring the sheep up. Sheep is dead. Cut into the sheep. They find this huge tumor-looking sort of thing inside of it. These guys are used to eviscerating sheep, and they know this doesn't belong in there. They cut it open, and there's this thing that it's alive inside. It looks like a baby seal. Like, you know, like you see at the aquarium, you know, a pinniped, a baby seal. That's what it looks like. But the eyes are so odd. We all described it the same thing. It looked like it had eyes of a human being. You know, you look at a seal, picture of a seal, and it's got these black eyes.
Right.
This thing had, like, human-looking eyes.
Oh, man.
Okay, and we had experiences with it. I won't go into the whole thing. But what has happened here is that I have been told that the Basque have seen the same creature again and again, and they've had many experiences with the, well, I'm going to call it the seal creature. Now, you had a guy on your show, I'm told, is red, like red elk or red something.
Red elk, yes.
And he talked about these things. They're called rock flyers. And that's what he described them as. But he described these seal. He's like a Native Indian, kind of Native American sort of guy.
Yes.
And he described these things as being rock flyers.
Well, that's an interesting name for them, rock flyers.
And he said these creatures that live down in the earth. But what I'm getting is the sense that they not only live in the earth, but they inhabit like different earths, and they are able to move between them.
It's also possible, Mel, it's crossed my mind, that very, very deep within the earth, there might even be a different set of laws of physics that might begin to
be
a reality that you would live with, and maybe that's why you're getting such weird things up out of these holes.
Well, if I'm pulling up ice that keeps burning, and it's not cold, and I mean, something
sounds like a different kind of physics.
Going on here, if we've got this metal collar that you cannot see from a certain distance and no longer registers on the mind or in the eye or in the retina.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I'll tell you something. Remember I told you I was given a replacement to the 1943 Roosevelt dime?
Yes, I recall.
After I was told about this thing here, and I tried to take pictures of it, believe me. Actually, I can't do any of that stuff. My nephew does. But this is what I discovered after I told that they couldn't see the flange from a certain distance.
Mm-hmm.
If I stand 15 feet away from the dime, I can no longer see it. I can see the holder. I've got it in a plastic, like, Lucite holder. I can see the holder. I can see straight through it. Then I walk towards it, and all of a sudden, the dime inside the holder materializes. That's what it's like. So I assumed that if it wasn't able to photograph, or not able to scan it, believe me, my nephew, he did everything he could to produce an image of this dime.
Right.
It could not do it. I'm holding it right in my hand as we speak. I still have it.
But you can't take a photograph of it.
I can't even, when it's 15 feet away.
What about the hole in Nevada? What about the hole in Washington?
Well, now, I've not been to the site of the hole, and I could assure you at this point that the hole in Washington it's probably been re-landscaped over there. So, anything...
But the hole in Nevada...
is still there as it was when I was there. It's out there in plain view.
Well, we need some photographs. We really need some photographs.
Well, I'm going to communicate with the Basque out there and say, look, why don't we just have people come out there, find out where it is. From my standpoint, this stuff sounds dangerous. And you know, I was telling you about how they hauled away this wood stove that had a bucket of ice in it and how heavy it became. Are you familiar with any of the works by Kurt Vonnegut?
Of course.
Okay, he wrote a book called Cat's Cradle, and in that book, Cat's Cradle, there was a substance in there, fictional substance, called Ice 9. And Ice 9 was developed for the military, fictional, so that the biggest scourge to the military is mud. So they developed a substance that could pour in the mud, and it would solidify the mud. And the problem with it, though, is that it would keep on solidifying all of the water out there as far as it could reach, and eventually it would destroy the planet if it continued to solidify. It absorbs all of the water. Well, scientists have actually speculated.
Is it something biological? I mean, I can't imagine.
I don't know.
Because it's hard to imagine what else could continue to proliferate unless it was some sort of biological agent. I know they have biological agents that clean up oil spills.
Yeah.
You know, they created creatures that eat oil.
I haven't thought of that. I'd never thought of this as a living thing. I always thought of it as a physical, chemical phenomenon.
Well, living things would be the one category that could continue to proliferate.
Anyway, this Ice 9 in fiction does that. It can literally attach itself to all the water and render it impossible to deal with. I mean, it would be no longer water. You can imagine a world without water.
Yeah, of course.
Well, scientists have speculated. You can go on the Internet and search for, like, Ice 9.
Yes.
And there are scientists that actually believe that something like Ice 9 can exist. They actually believe that it is possible to accomplish something like the fictional Ice 9.
Well, that's why I kept saying, what about a different set of laws of physics inside the Earth? Obviously, something about the deep Earth, Mel, is very different than what we have here.
The whole new set of laws down there that are going. But this ice has been, this burning ice has been a great, huge source of concern for all the people that I talk to. You know, and then I'm not military, whatever they worded down there, that went to the.
So you have no idea who has it now?
No, they took it away, and that was the report that I got, and. Excuse me. Anyway, wanted to get back to the actual hole over there in your state, I told you about the helicopters that routinely fly over there, and apparently no one has been molested over there that is encamped around the hole. But the Basque that are there have told me that they receive visits from the seal-like creature.
Recalling for everybody, the creature went back down the hole.
I actually took this and put him on the flange.
Right.
And he just dived in to the hole.
Like a seal into the water.
Exactly. Yeah. Precisely like that. And what I've been told is that the Basque have found a way of communicating with the seal, because it comes up regularly now. It's like a regular visitor. And what they did, and I don't know how they decided to do this, but the seal speaks to them through one of their boom boxes. So here you got the seal that's sitting there on the flange.
Mel, do you realize how crazy? this sounds.
I was crazy sounding from the first day.
Yeah, well, you have a point, Mel. But I mean, the seal or whatever God's name this is.
To communicate to them.
Through a boombox.
Through the radio on the boombox. I don't know how it does it. I don't have any idea of how radio works, okay?
Well,
you're the radio guy.
It receives radio frequency.
That's
so
right.
The implication would be this creature is capable of...
Of
radiating some sort of modulated radio frequency, and that's how it would happen.
I always heard these tales of like people hearing like radio and their tooth filling.
Oh no, it's true.
And wire fences
really
out on the range.
It's all true.
You know, so I don't know, but anyway, they have been communicating with them, and one of them was actually smart enough to press the record button on the boombox.
Good move.
Yeah. He did. But this is what happened when he played it back.
Yes.
It sounded like, I've listened to shortwave radio before.
Yes.
But it sounded like that inner modulation that you get between, like, it's a series of chirps and bloops and bleeps and things like that.
Oh, yes.
That's what was recorded.
Oh, isn't that
bloops and bleeps and stuff. That's all that was on a tape. I used to like those bloops and bleeps because they used to help me sleep. You know, I would turn it in between like a shortwave channel.
Do you have that recording?
I don't have it handy, but...
have it.
But it sounds exactly like that, the bloops and bleeps you get between some of the shortwave radio stations.
Wow.
Exactly. I have no idea, but they were hearing this, you know, speaking to them in the language they understood. And so they talk about it. And again, I wasn't there, okay? But I don't think these guys, the Basque, are pulling my leg. They're not that kind of guy. They might be crazy enough to want to go into a hole.
Well, crazy as it may sound, it's not really crazy based on your own first-hand experience with the holes now, is it?
No. It isn't.
If you take one context as a reality, then you can. It seems to me it shouldn't be that hard for you to accept their word on what's happened here.
Right. And so, in that sense, but I'm also describing this to... Many, many, probably millions of people, I assume.
Probably, yes.
And what I was told is that, that these creatures inhabit the Earth and they inhabit the other spaces linked and not linked together. And they're communicating through the radio to them is what's occurring. And they do receive visitations from the seal creature from time to time.
Well, I already like these little guys. If they use radio, they're my...
Are they your kind of people there?
Gotcha.
Okay, now the Basque were warned about the ice that we sent down.
What kind of warning?
They said from the seal creatures that the ice can and would destroy the world in a very little amount of time. This stuff is too dangerous to fool around with. You don't have any way...
It's not supposed to be up here.
...of understanding how this works, even though it is so tempting that all of a sudden, in a bucket of ice, I've got what seems to be a unimaginable source of power. You know, an inexhaustible source of power, apparently. But I can't imagine if it's being inexhaustible if it's getting heavier and it's absorbing water. I mean, that to me doesn't sound like, you know, so I think that stuff that was down there really is truly dangerous if not contained properly, is my feeling on that there. And that's the warnings that they were giving. They said that the world would be destroyed by the improper use of the ice, but they anticipate that greedy and undisciplined use of the ice will probably occur in this world.
Greedy and undisciplined?
Disciplined use of the ice.
That's an interesting phrase.
Yeah. In fact, that's what was quoted to me, that term, greedy and undisciplined.
Well, you know, the world is looking, you know, for new power sources. Anything that burns, Mel, and changes its own weight in that manner has a great deal of power.
This kind of reminds me of something. You know, we're a fossil fuel-based economy, right? And we've been using oil for the last 150 years, you know, crude oil, petroleum.
Long time.
Before that, the oil that we used was whale oil. And some of the most famous whalers in the world were the Basque.
That's true.
Now, I told you some time ago that there was a whale bone, and it's stuck in a tree in Ellensburg.
You know, I remember that.
And I've been told by the Basque that they left that there, that they were Basque in the area of the Washington Hole, and they left that whale bone there kind of as a marker. That's all I want to say about that, but that's what I've been told.
Do you think that somehow those beneath ground understood something about what we needed? Or what they thought we needed?
Well, I'll tell you this much, because there are other things that were said that, and this might explain some things to you, but, you know, we talked about the greedy and undisciplined use of the ice, and they said that they, these seal creatures, they can travel between these worlds, and that there are other people in the other worlds that have designs on this world, because this world is in pretty good shape. There are some people out there in other worlds that are similar to ours, but their world is so horrible.
Well, our world is at least above ground.
Yeah, but their world is so horrible that if we had suffered a nuclear holocaust on this world, they would be happy to inhabit it. There are people there, and what they were told is there are other worlds similar to ours that have designs on this world, and that they monitor what happens on this world. And they
okay, listen to me now. We're almost out of time,
okay.
Mel. Anything critical to get out?
Just that they are looking at our conditions, and they are saying, "Hey, the world that is the Earth that we know is on a collision course to disaster." And a lot of them think this is good. That then, when we're gone, they can come here, and they think they're smart enough to use the ice that's here. That's the word I'm getting, okay? I'm not a prophet. I'm not anything. I'm just
reporting.
Was
the implication in that the ice was rare even to them?
The ice is rare, but it is when it's discovered, it's almost always improperly used. That no one has had the smartness. Now, these seal creatures...
Implication being there's been other pieces of this above ground.
In other similar situations there that have been used... And maybe it's been that some of this has surfaced in one of these holes, and you were saying maybe that's how these holes are formed.
Yeah.
Any number of those things.
All right, listen to me, my friend. We've got to go.
That's fine.
I want you to tell me, swear to me that you'll get hold of some people at the University of Washington.
I will.
Or wherever, and proceed with this, will you?
Talk to the Basque. I think they're thinking along my way. They have no real vested interest.
All right, I'm going to look for that to happen, Mel. You take care, my friend.
Thank you very much, Art Bell.
Good night, Mel Waters.
Bye.
Well, that was quite an update, wasn't it? Yeah, I know. But maybe it could be true. We'll be back.